You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists from all over the world. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. Please search for Fakeologist Audio Chat and Fakeologist Main Show on your favorite podcast app. To connect to our always on and always streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. To listen to the live stream, go to fake11.com/radio2. Now, on with the audio chat.
So fouls again here.
Hi, guys. We're East Coast time. It's a little bit before 11 p.m. on Wednesday, April 5th. Got a bunch of people here on Install Media. I'm Wild Times 3. Zombie Dave.
Hey.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Here's with us. We have not sure. We were having a conversation that we thought should be recorded. It was based on a question and or premise that the zombie brought up. So if you would like to restate that, and O'Fallis had a... the first response that we're going to just make sure.
Let me just say right off the bat, this is on Install Media speaking. These guys are probably going to talk for a solid half hour, and I'm not going to have anything to say because I don't know the Bible. But go ahead, gentlemen. The floor is yours.
We can still have an opinion if we don't know the Bible too well, because we've seen
You don't have to be versed in the Bible, because the Bible is just about truth and life.
All of us have seen how Christianity affects the culture.
You still have an opinion about what's happening in it.
Oh, yeah. I can still have an opinion as long as some of you will let me speak when I have something to say. But it's a little bit hard to take the floor sometimes.
Hopefully I won't need to do any moderation, and we'll kind of just talk in order. So Zombie Dave, have the floor.
Welcome to Fakeologist, where you have to butt in and continue talking to get...
Hopefully I don't have to do any. Yes, O'Fallis, hopefully I don't have to do any.
Right off the bat.
This is why I have to say it.
We were having a conversation outside of here, perfectly fine.
Yeah, and you don't want to continue it. You don't want to continue it just because I said that. Zombie Dave has the floor.
All right, let's get this show on the road. Let's get this show on the road. Where I am, it is the 6th of April, 2023, and I am Zombie Dave, coming to you on Fakeologist Audio and fakeologist.com. So the premise we were talking about earlier on the other live stream, which is the non-recorded one, and there are two on fakeologist.com Discord, and you can always hop into the non-recorded one to get warmed up, as we did just before this call. We were talking about the Bible, and also we were talking about how it relates to living one's life, and I brought up the possibility that the people who actually wrote the Bible, may have been using it as a tool to control people. Not a particularly controversial topic, I don't think.
No, it's a very major topic.
But the specifics of what I was saying
and it's a
was
very
around...
thing to consider.
Yeah, the point I actually brought up to illustrate this was the old turning the other cheek paradigm, which is, of course, one of Jesus' most famous moments in the Bible, or statements, I should say. Now, I'm not a biblical scholar, so I'm probably going to get lots wrong here. But I am familiar with that particular thing in the Bible. And to me, it seems like a convenient way to get people to forgive and to sort of do nothing rather than take action against those who wronged you. And this was challenged, Scully? O'Fallis.
Yeah, you guys just call me O'Fallis. I'll change my name and avatar again. I'll go back. I've just been lazy.
Yeah, and basically what I'm getting at is that if you were gonna try and control other people, the best way to do that would be to put them in a position of weakness against you, no matter whatever position you happen to be in, whatever situation. Yeah, yeah. Like if you have a monopoly on violence, as the authorities do, then you are in a stronger position than those who are not entitled to distribute violence, right?
And so you convince the people to submit themselves to violence because they will be serviced in the afterlife. Of course, you would do that. Obviously,
exactly. That's really what I was getting at.
I understand that argument, but now we understand the argument. I can make my counterpoint.
Sure, let's go for it.
So when Jesus speaks of turning the other cheek in the Bible, when he has people who said a woman committed a sin, and he said, "He that has not sinned, cast the first stone," and all of them walked away. The whole premise is amongst your brothers and sisters, your peers, people in your community that you love and respect, which again, this is like 2,000 years ago, and communities are very segregated and very interwoven, and they have entertainment, so they're very quick to be like, "Oh, this is a witch," and persecute them. But his point was, amongst your family and friends, if they sin, you should forgive them because they're amongst your family and friends, and amongst your Christians, amongst your Christian fellowship, your brothers and sisters, because within Christianity, all your peers in Christianity are your brothers and sisters. We're all family because all of us are pursuing Christ. So if your brother and sister in Christ sins, you should turn the other cheek because they made a mistake. And if you're a Christian and you're called out on it, you understand you made a mistake, and the repentance you put on yourself is greater than anybody can do to you. If somebody kills you, that is lesser than the repentance you put on yourself for sinning and God. So that's what he's talking about. But also, Jesus, one of the most important parts of the Bible is when he goes in the synagogue and turns over the tables on the Pharisees for committing sin in the church. Like,
the money changes.
There's a lot of things in Jesus where, like, the modern political climate wants to convince people that Christians are like, yeah, just turn the other cheek to any sin. The government wants to tax you, turn the other cheek. No, that's not what Jesus was saying. He was saying, turn the other cheek when your brother and sister makes a mistake, because we are all going to make mistakes. That's the nature of humanity. We will all sin.
But I agree with that. Is that how it's taught, is what I'm asking.
And separate from that, Jesus taught, forgive your brothers and sisters for making mistakes so that they can be better, because they will hold themselves more accountable than you can. And God will hold them more accountable than either of you can. But then separate from that, he also demonstrated that when there's people like the Pharisees who cannot comprehend the word of God, he threw over their tables and kicked them out of the synagogue and told them that they were doomed to hell and never going to return. And literally, if they were going to fight him, he would have fought them. They never fought him in the Bible, but the presentation in those scenarios was literally, if they chose to fight him, he would have fought them and they would have died because he had God on his side, which is represented also in many other passages where he talks about how the authority on earth is, wouldn't it be successful if God wasn't behind it? And that's why people that are successful in battle and claim land are righteous people, because God enables them to be successful. And you can.
So, I mean, just in the middle of that, it's like, I agree with like the premise that the controllers might have made it to control. And I agree with what you're saying from my knowledge of the Bible, that it's not like it wasn't written to say that per se. But I mean, I think the way it's taught is that, like, I went through 14 years of Catholic school, to start, you know, in the beginning of my life. The idea that I was
that you say how it's taught, and then you talk about Catholic school. The Catholic Church isn't a Christian organization. The Catholic Church,
I understand, but
Church exists to push anti-Christian propaganda.
I understand.
Isn't Christian, you know, at all.
After the break.
They guided me with psyops. psychological operations.
They guided me with psyops.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
Michael Jackson.
And so, yeah, we're back after the break, Wednesday, April 5th. So, you know, I said Catholic school. It was attached to a Catholic church. I should have said religious school because we didn't really get taught. We didn't go to mass in school.
You shouldn't say religious school. You should say Catholic school. You should specify the denomination.
The school was attached to a parish, but it wasn't. We didn't learn anything but other. We learned about other religions. They didn't teach us like that this religion was correct in the religious period of the day. So, which I had, I think, twice a week.
Lutheran school?
No, it was, I think it's considered a Roman Catholic parish. There was not a lot of religious teaching.
What state is this in? Is this
Maryland?
Maryland? Okay.
Okay, so my quick thought is that,
the only denomination I agree with both of you that teaches other religions is Lutherans.
Yeah, I mean, I went to, a Catholic preparatory high school for the first 2 years, and they made us go to a synagogue and a mosque. One every year, you had to go to a different denomination's service to learn about other denominations.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and then we had to do a report. Of course, we went and talked to the head religious figure at the parish or at the synagogue and at the mosque before we went to introduce ourselves and everything. But So my thoughts are kind of like I kind of agree, and I'd like to hear what Carolina has to say too. Kind of agree with with the premise that it could be possible or is working well, that, you know, it might say one thing, but it just seems the turn your other cheek seems to be universal, and the flip over the table seems to be taught about just only defend the places of worship like that.
Oh, that's not what I didn't say. It was only about the places of worship.
Well, I'm not saying you said that. I'm saying that that's what I think the populace is taught. Yeah,
I understand. I just want to point out that when he was defending places of worship, he wasn't just defending places of worship. He was defending righteousness. He was what he was doing was pointing out there's times to be violent.
Yeah, I agree.
Justification for violence in the New Testament.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that message
downplayed. It's downplayed by the modern message, but the modern message doesn't exist from the Orthodox Christian Church. If the Orthodox Christian Church doesn't have a message. They aren't spreading the word. But based on the Bible itself, there's a justification based on the example I gave of sin in the church to aggressively defend truth and righteousness in the world. There is a justification there, and it's not the Crusades. The Crusades are a fabrication on behalf of Islam and the Jesuits. That wasn't the Christian Church at all. But there is a justification to violently defend yourself and humanity against evil based on the New Testament. And my example was just Jesus flipping tables in the church, the synagogue. I just don't want it to be that simplified. I feel like it's much greater than that one example.
Yeah, no doubt. That was a great burp. Well said.
Not sure here, or Carolinas. Okay, so basically the entirety of when Christ comes, the people that are claiming to be religious, the people that are of different religious views, have a context of the Old Testament prophets. In there, your politics and your law and your idea of justice has violence allowed. But in his society in that day, you had issues of personal vengeance. Personal vengeance where culturally you go up to someone else and you slap them across the face as an initiation for a duel. For a personal duel, one-on-one. This is forbidden in Christian law, or according to what Christ is teaching. You're not supposed to seek your personal vengeance for your personal pride, honor, whatever it is.
Yes.
You are for your family and your nation and the church. These are all collective or communal, like multiple identities. It's not for you alone. I mean, you see the saints. The saints go into alone to whatever it is, the situation, and they often don't fight for themselves personally. But when they're talking about enemies, they're talking about personal enemies. This is all I have. I have the church fathers right here open to this very passage. I could read you, but basically they're not. They're talking about your personal enemies. Enemies of your folk or your church or your, you know, the community. That's a different ball game. And you have the Cossacks as a perfect example of this, where Slavic Orthodox people are being kidnapped by Jews and Turks and enslaved and sold into slavery. And then you have this whole martial group, say, basically living to stop it. You know, that's what they do. And violence is definitely a thing.
Not a single one of those saints ever fought to save his own life.
No, not for themselves. But you do have warriors, you know, and you have the violence, absolutely, whether it's on... Yeah, it's...
Plenty of warriors, like, always in had, the church, you always had capital punishment saints
for certain things.
The greatest thing you can do in Christianity
is not a a passive, you know, truth, because it is the truth, you know.
But it is aggressively pushed as a passive religion. Like, they want to convince everybody that is a Christian to be.
That's passive. Leo Tolstoy's view. Yeah, that's Leo Tolstoy's. He's not Orthodox, and he's not. And he's modern. He's totally modern. He's seen as like the. His ideas are condemned by the church as the sort of preparatory stage for the Bolsheviks, you know, like to disarm people morally. Yeah. Pacifism is not allowed. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just not. You can live as a monk in the middle of nowhere and you don't do anything violent.
Isn't a thing in Christianity. But
that's different.
Like, for you to stand and ignore sin goes against Christianity completely.
Obviously you don't attack someone physically for every sin. I mean, that's not what taught.
Like, you're supposed to stand up and defend truth, and if that leads to you dying, well, you accept it happily.
Where is that practice these days? Where do Christians actually practice?
Nowhere. They don't
This is the number one thing that's like been removed from society. Like, even if you do stand up for Christian values and die as a martyr, it'll be muddled in history because they'll say like you're a pedophile, or like they'll just make up legal excuses for why you were killed. Like, you can't die as a Christian martyr anymore. They have eliminated that. They'll just call you like a white nationalist.
The definition of a martyr is a witness.
Well, technically, but the point of a martyr is to die so that other people can see you standing up and dying for Christ. The whole point of being a martyr is so that it'll bring other people's attention to Christ. Like, you died for truth is what martyrdom is about. And they've made so much effort to muddle truth, you literally can't die as a martyr anymore. It's been removed from society. So it makes a very
You shouldn't be hung up on that, because everything everything covered will be revealed. It's not really like we're living in the end of history, as Bill Clinton asserted.
I mean, I feel like we're kind of living in the end of history, because at the end of history, Satan will remove all truth from everything, which includes denying martyrs revealing truth. Like, the most important thing about a martyr is that they demonstrate that they're being killed for their views. And we can't do that anymore because we'll be killed for our views, but then they'll tell people we're killed for views that aren't views because they control all the media and information and et cetera. Like,
well, it seems like that the book is slotted in the perfect place to accomplish the goal that, it may be accomplishing if the premise would be accepted as correct. I mean, it's perfectly poised to.
Well, yeah. So you'll die a martyr. You just won't die a martyr in your life. Like, no, nobody will acknowledge you're a martyr, but you will be a martyr, but nobody will know it, which is, it's just kind of sad, you know?
So zombie, according to like what your head about this conversation, I mean, is there a bigger conversation to have about what would lead to us concluding something about how the book or why the book was written, you know, or how it was manipulated or edited, or is just the fact that it may be working kind of enough?
I think there's some good points being made about the interpretation of it. And so that's ultimately what matters. It's how it's interpreted, not what's written, but how people actually decide to practice what's written. And if you extend that paradigm further, it goes out into the way people treat each other on any topic these days. The default is always do nothing. Wait and see what happens. Don't take any direct action yourself. Just take the last 3 years, for example. How many people took any kind of direct action against the measures that were being enforced against them? Very few, right? They were strongly discouraged to do anything. They were just encouraged to do nothing, go with the crowd, forgive people for getting things wrong. And we're still being told that even now, you know, you've got to forgive and forget and move on.
Being Christian just meant you said no. Which, I was living in Portland during the COVID time, and there was one church in the entire county area that said no. One church amongst like 100, more than 100. There was one church that said no. And they weren't going to shut down. They weren't going to stop doing service. And they just paid the fines. And people flocked to that church. That church had, like, they were out the door with people coming to that church. And all those people paid tithe. And they used that tithe to pay the fines for them congregating under the COVID martial law. So yeah, the state said you couldn't group up with this many people. And if you did, you had to pay a fine. But they did it anyway. And it attracted even more people. And those people paid to cover the fine. Like the church didn't abuse that money. It was just the people agreeing that it was wrong and paying the fine in a giant group.
And yeah, they did the right thing. They did the right thing. That's a good example of doing the right thing.
That church still today is blossoming, or not blossoming, it's proliferating. Like that church is,
I'm happy to hear that. So hard.
No, it's beautiful. It's so fucking beautiful.
It's nice to see people doing the right thing and being rewarded for it.
But it was one church amongst 100. Like,
well, we had that in world orthodoxy. They like, some of us are orthodox, like true orthodox or whatever, but we're not with the big, World Council of Churches groups. And you could see all those people willing, before they were even like a hint of persecution, they're saying they're going to go along, they're going to give lists of all their parishioners and snitch to the state.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of stuff. And that's just totally unacceptable. It's not only, like, it's just complete, like, blasphemy. You know, you have to wear a mask.
Well, exactly.
Liturgy? What the heck?
That's where, that's where
all that evil.
Like, this church, like, I'll happily post it. Like, I love this.
Have some balls.
Priest. Like, he's such a cool man. I mean, he's not a cool man. He's a great man. Like, he didn't give a fuck, and he put everything on the line. He put everything on the line to stand up for.
There's a great book for anyone who's interested. It's called the Prologue of Ohrid, and it follows 365 days a year through the year. And it speaks of lives of the martyrs and you know, scriptures in the Bible and these sorts of things. And it's been, you know, around for a really long time. And it's called the Prologue of Ohrid. And I'm going to spell Ohrid for you. It's O-H-R-I-D. But the Prologue of Ohrid. You can look it up online and you can follow it by the days of the year. But, you know, a lot of people talk about martyrs and the concept of martyrs, and it's all very abstract. And what people think of is like suicide, Islamic bombers and everything, and they don't realize the depth of the Christian martyrs in history that can be understood and realized through the very title I just mentioned, that you can look it up online, the Prologue of Ohrid. And it's got an entry for every day of the year. And I would challenge anybody to, you know, follow that for 365 days and then come back and speak about the nature of martyrs, because we would, you know, it would be the same as like, you know,
I mean, is it pro or
you know, martyrs? Al Glover coming into the channel asking, you know, why would they lie? And, you know,
I was going to ask the same thing. What does it say about martyrs?
Yeah, is it pro or negative?
The Prologue Ohrid is a history of the martyrs.
Yeah, but is it
Christianity that died? You see, there's a great divide.
Pro
in most
pro martyrs.
Most Christianity's understanding between the East and the West, and they don't see the difference between the Greeks and the Romans. And so, Roman is a Greek, and to be a Greek is a Roman.
Before you go too deep down this rabbit hole, we have a premise that the new people that joined here, we were going to introduce them after the break, might not know what this conversation is specifically about. I realized that I should have stopped things earlier when they came in or explained in chat. So, Zombie, if you would like to restate where this started and bring us up to speed with like what your thoughts are, because you had the idea in the first place, that would be cool. But before you tell us, Zombie, let's hear from Uninstall Media.
I would like to just ask one preface question to the whole panel, and let's go around the table. But were all of you raised Christian, or did come to your beliefs later in life?
You know, I don't know that everybody would want to answer that, but yeah, if you would like to.
I think it's a very important question. I was raised atheist, and then made myself agnostic, and then through my study of science became Christian. But I wasn't raised Christian whatsoever, but I'm an aggressive Christian now. Not aggressive, but definitely Christian now.
I was going to ask you, what is aggressive Christianity? So wild times here. I was raised Christian. Moved away from it for a while, but I find myself finding more, identifying with more as time goes on recently.
Yeah, the more information I gather, the more Christian I become, frankly.
Yeah, so if anybody else would like to answer, like Carolinas, I know you probably would like to answer.
Yeah, I was raised, sort of Protestant, and then after a long, long, long time, I just found in Orthodoxy, and then the truth in Orthodoxy as far as like what the primitive church was. And so I went toward that. And then I found out more about the main ones, basically compromising with the world and Satan. And so I found it in a much smaller group of them that didn't compromise with all that. And that's where I'm at.
No compromise of sin.
After the break.
before the break. Wow. That's how hard it is to say.
Would you like to support Fakeologist.com and all the content we're creating? We operate on the value for value principle, where you pay whatever you can for whatever value you feel you've received. We accept donations in almost every form, from PayPal to Bitcoin. Please go to Fakeologist.com/donate for your payment options. Thank you for your support.
And coming back after the break, it's Wednesday, April 5th. Hold on, guys. It's Wednesday, April 5th, and we have a bunch of people here having a conversation. We moved over from the non-live stream. We have Truth IM with us, Zombie Dave. It's Koiken. This is Wild Side. We have some new people named like Zarek. You know, Phallus, Uninstall Media, and INFJ is in the background. So I'm going to list all the people. The question was about faith in, The question was about faith, and we were going to introduce what we were raised as. So, there's a few people if they'd like to answer, go ahead, and then we'll, go back to Zombie for the recap about the premise of this conversation.
Hey, this is Truth IM here. Just really quickly, just wanted to make sure people aren't talking over other people's behalf.
Truth IM, I've got the moderation here. You don't have to worry about it.
I hate both of you so much.
Truth, you don't have to worry about it. People are doing very good here.
I am not moderating. I'm just saying.
I know. That's why you don't need to play moderator and tell people what to do.
That was a perfect Cartman.
I hate you guys so much.
I really do.
Well, I'm glad.
I love you too, buddy. I love you too.
I'm glad that you're inspired to have hate.
All I wanted to say was I posed that question because I wanted to know where everyone's coming from, because I myself was not raised Christian, but I'm also like, I see where the intersection of conspiracy theory and Christianity and all the myriad Christian denominations intersect with conspiracy theory.
No, it's literally
and perfect. So, you know, I value people's morality, and I genuinely want to know like where you're coming from may have been exposed to growing up.
I became a Christian because of conspiracies. Like literally the conspiracies about who runs the world, which turned out to be the Jews, surprise, led to me to be a Christian, which is the religion the Jews hate the most. And after
I'm not sure everyone here would
Continue. My journey was I started with Bob Dylan's song, his 17-minute song about evil and politics, and I learned about all the evil in the world, and I learned about where it came from, and where it came from was the Kabbalah and the Talmud, and then I learned about the opposite of that. I learned about why does the Talmud hate Christians so much? And if you start with learning about evil, you will inevitably find the opposite, which is Christianity. Because the Jews, the Talmud, the Kabbalists, the Israel, all the things that are literally ruining the world, they hate Jesus Christ so much. They hate him so much. They hate him more than anybody can really comprehend how to hate.
I agree with you. Like, but I just want to say one thing.
I can't hate anything as much as the Jews hate Jesus Christ. And just because of that, I love Jesus Christ.
Just for the listener or anyone, most of the groups under that term. You're saying Christianity, and you mean like the true. I get that, but
I don't mean the Catholics. I don't mean the Protestants.
Okay, but I just want to say, yeah, most of the groups operating under that, for the listener, aren't. You know, we live in a fake world full of lies and all this sort of thing. So
Christianity is raped by a bunch of Protestant, and
I just wanted to put that out there.
That absolutely ruin the word of Christ. But the New Testament, if you just read the New Testament, it's a beautiful, perfect thing. And it just the fact that there's so many Protestant churches and the Catholic Church ruining all of it, even though it's just a simple book. It's just a simple fucking book. The New Testament, the word of Jesus Christ. And you have all these churches, like dozens, literally multiple dozens, ruining it. That should be suspicious. That's an indicator that they're trying to stop you from just seeing the simple truth that is the New Testament. That's why.
What about other people? Do they want to share? Other people want to go talk about their, you know, what they're raised in.
All Protestants.
I want to share.
And the Catholic Church.
And I don't want to share about what I was raised as. But I do want to share. I hear so many people talk about Christianity, you know, from all this, you know, I mean, from everything. And,
Zarek, I'm sorry to stop you, but we were going to go around the table real quick. Add where we, if we wanted to talk about where we were raised or how we were raised in Christianity or not. And then we're going to go back to Zombie Dave so we can talk about the premise, because this is a call focused on a point that we haven't, you know, communicated to the new people.
I was raised Catholic. Since I'm already in here, and I was raised Catholic, but, you know, I recognized, I turned against it all in fourth grade, you know?
Fourth grade?
yeah, fourth grade.
Heck yeah.
Fuck the Pope.
You know why? Because a Catholic school teacher said not to murder was the golden law. If you murdered somebody, it was to go to hell. It was like Cain and Abel, and like if you murdered somebody, you were going to hell.
And, so how did you come back to Christianity?
Baby.
And so I raised my hand and like, are you trying to tell me that like to kill somebody is to you know, go to hell, you know, like, you know. Yeah, she like, you know, dude.
And how did you find your way back to Christianity?
My dad, my father, you know, served for this country. And he was on the school board, and and that's exactly I responded to her. I was like, you know, are you telling me my dad's going to hell for serving his country and you know, Vietnam? And she said, yeah. And I was like, but he's on the school board.
did he fire her?
Not like that. And I was just like, but he's on the school board. And like ever since then, you know, like, you know, that was, see, that's the ex-gen days, right?
Hey, Zarek, I'm sorry to stop you, but if anybody else would like to talk about how they came into Christianity in their younger years, please do. And then we're going to go to Zombie Dave to move forward on the premise.
Once again, why I hate you.
Yeah, I know.
Zarek, has your father ever killed a person?
I have something.
So right now, we're going around and we're talking about, that we're trying to answer the question that Uninstalled Media asked, if you'd like to talk about how you were, came into Christianity or what type of religion you were raised in, please do.
Can anybody hear me?
Yes, Mike sounds great.
Okay, I was born a Catholic, and then from my mother's side, and then Christian on my dad's side. I recently became a born again Christian in around 2016.
And what does that mean?
Born again Christian is where you find Christianity on your own terms. Void of the Christian church.
I refuse this title. I refuse to be called a born again Christian, which by their definition, I am a born again Christian. But I refute it. It's a terrible concept.
But do you think is that a correct definition now, what he said? Like the definition?
Well, sure. If you're going to invent that construct of a born again Christian, sure, that's the definition of it, but it doesn't need to exist. It's a silly orchestration. Like,
yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think everybody that wanted to talk has had time to say their where they came from. Zombie Dave, just so the new users who are in this conversation and haven't heard where this started, if you were to give us a quick recap about what your thoughts were and how well this conversation has helped, get some clarity for you on the conversation, the original premise, please.
Yeah, sure. I'll restate it briefly. Where we started was the idea that did people who ultimately wrote the Bible, or at least the version that we are given today, the ones that presented that version to us are the ones who are in control at the top of the pyramid, right? So they would probably want it interpreted or written in such a way that means that those who subscribe to that would be in a weaker position overall than they are. That's my theory here, right? If they were going to distribute a text that people would live their lives by, it would place those people in a weaker position than those who are distributing the text. That's one of the reasons why they would do it. Because it would just give them an advantage, right? And the example that I used was the turn the other cheek example. Alphalus brought up a great point though, which is it's all about how it's interpreted, because the way it's written is that you should basically not stand for sinners sinning and not being Christian. But that's not what's really taught or practiced these days. In most cases, Christians don't actually flip the table over when they see people sinning, people who are not their friends and family.
Dave J does.
And I think that's actually the crucial part of all this. It's not good what's one. Written. It's not what's written in the Bible. It's how it's interpreted and how it's actually practiced.
Well, no, I don't agree with that. It's not really open to interpretation. It's very straightforward.
Doesn't matter how straightforward it is if no one, or at least if not enough people are doing it. It doesn't matter how straightforward it is. No, in reality, what's practiced that matters.
No, it matters more because there's a lot of effort to misinterpret it for pursuing the degeneration of society. That makes it more important to interpret it correctly,
it is interpretable all the more clear.
Yeah, but it's not that interpretable. It's pretty straightforward on this topic.
I mean, in theoretically correct, or scholarly, exactly. You're correct. But in practice,
it's the difference between in theory and in practice. In theory, in writings, it says one thing. In practice, people do another thing. So what really counts? What's in the writings or what people actually do?
Well, that was my argument. Like we were talking about how he said turn the other cheek, and I pointed out how when he tells people to turn the other cheek, he's telling them to turn the other cheek against their own brethren. Like the example of
a woman, and you nailed your argument. Then. You nailed it. It's just the question in practice, what is the book used to do? Dave?
Well, if I nailed it, then we don't really have to elaborate, but I obviously didn't nail it, because the point is your peers, people that are trustworthy, like if your brother or sister or your father or mother sins, you accept their sin, turn the other cheek, because you trust them to hold themselves accountable in the eyes of Christ. That's what that's about. When you turn the other cheek in the Bible, you're turning the other cheek on a fellow Christian. You're turning the other cheek on a person who you trust will hold themselves accountable.
Yeah, but you're talking about a theoretical Christian. In most cases, though, that's not how most Christians practice it.
I understand, but when it's presented in modern time, they present it like fucking Cortez, the fucking vice president or whatever. She presents it like, oh, hey, you should just forgive all your neighbors for all their sins. It's like, And she pretends like she's a Christian. It's like, no, that's not what it says. You forgive.
But that is how it's practiced. That's the point. That's the point I'm making. That's how life is lived today. Yes. People forgive. People are taught to forgive everyone for everything, no matter what.
But
and if they had any foresight, the Bible is used to do that.
I agree with you.
You agree with who?
We should
forgive everybody of everything, man. Not for other people's sake, but for our own sake.
But dude, the issue is
you got resentment against somebody else.
But are you going to tolerate
when
someone?
You got resentment. When you got resentment against somebody else, when somebody else has something against you, like where it's got like you tore up inside, you just like renting somebody's space in your head, squatter.
When somebody slaps you, you don't just stand still and not defend yourself. I think that's part of what the conversation is.
We all got people. We all look back to the past, man. If we look back to the years, we look at, you know.
But, Zarek, we're not talking about
that. Hurt us and these kind of things that may like burn us, you know.
Zarek, we're not talking about the past. We're talking about turn the other cheek, which is like now. I mean, you can't always turn the other cheek, right?
The most important part of Christianity is learning how to forgive people for their sins and learning how to forgive yourself. That's literally the most important part of Christianity is forgiving yourself.
But that happens after you decide whether to turn the cheek or flip the table, right?
Yes.
But you see, it's not for his sake. It's not for his sake. It's for our sake. People keep trying to like internalize this, like, if I do this, then like, you know, things are going to be great for me in this world. No, this is to like get rid of that bullshit.
I don't know what people are externalizing.
We all got shit from our past, you know, like, and like issues or like people from our past or whatever. You know, and that it's hard to forgive, right?
And they forgive themselves.
When we can forgive and let that go, you know, and they're not renting that space in our head anymore, you know? I mean, it's for our sake. We pray for them for our sake. I mean, it's not even a selfish thing. We have to do it selflessly. Yeah, selflessly.
It helps
rid that, you know. When you got a squatter in your house and you can't get him out, you got to call the landlord. And we do that through prayer.
Absolutely.
Teaching people to not fight back is how you make people subjugated.
Yeah. So the topic we're having is how Christianity justifies violence, essentially. Justifies standing up for yourself. Like, it's very important to forgive people. It's very important to forgive yourself. Like, the most important part of Christianity is forgiving yourself and forgiving others. That's the most important thing. Absolutely. No, there's no discussion about that. That is what makes Christianity the most important thing, is that you can forgive yourself and move on, and then you can forgive other people you love and move on and do good things. But
that is
there's still room in Christianity to not forgive people. And that's the topic we're addressing. The topic is, who do we not forgive and how do we deal with that? Because that's one of the hardest topics of Christianity that the Catholic Church ignores, that almost every single Christian church ignores, but it's the most important topic. And
is that the topic? I thought the topic was pacification through, you know, misinterpretation of this book, and maybe it was made to be used that way.
No, I'm not
going to hate the sin, forgive the sinner.
When it is appropriate to choose aggression and violence through Christianity, because what you brought
that's not what Zombie Day started us off at, where we were going.
It literally is. It was. The Bible teaches you to turn the other cheek, okay? Yes, we all understand I mean, any Christian understands that. And there's
after the break.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
I'm Gary King from Gary King Music, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com.
Wednesday, April 5th. Got a big panel here. Go ahead.
So the Bible teaches forgiveness of yourself and others, and that's the most important part about it. But what happens in modern society is they're trying to convince people that Christians can't retaliate. They can't defend themselves. They can't stand up for what's right. But the Bible also teaches that when people aren't righteous, you stand up to them, you speak your truth, and if you have to die for it, you fucking die for it. But the most
you said they're trying to convince people. Maybe they convince people.
It's not about convincing anybody. The truth is the truth. It doesn't matter if you convince anybody.
It does matter.
It doesn't matter in the scope of God.
Yeah, I understand. The original premise is this pacifying society. And,
the premise was whether or not you fight or flight.
Modern
Jews tell you that as a Christian, you should turn the other cheek and ignore your adversaries. But what the Bible actually teaches you is that when somebody is an adversary to Christ, you aggressively speak out and you aggressively intervene. And if that gets you killed, you fucking die.
Well, You supported Zombie's point. The modern Jews, that is what's taught, even if the Bible says something else.
Yeah, I've never been taught in any of the classes I took at school. Around Christians, none of them ever taught me to flip the table if I was sufficiently pissed off. They all taught me to forgive those who are sinning against me. I'm not arguing against that, right? I agree with you that it is in the Bible.
Yeah, no, I understand.
The point I'm making is, you don't have to intervene. I understand.
I didn't want to stick on this, right? I wanted to spring off it into other things. It's the pacification of society by only teaching certain aspects of the text and making that the norm.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
And it's filtered through society.
They want to make
it's filtered out everywhere.
This passive thing where you turn the other cheek.
They have done it.
Well, they've succeeded.
Yeah, it's already done. As you said, 99 churches complied, one didn't. It's done. It's over. But if you, right? 99, but if you read the 99 Bible, out of 100.
The Bible is very clear that you don't do that.
You are a student of it. So I imagine other students of it would, other scholars of the Bible who are well read on it would probably agree. But, for most of the population who is a casual, acquaintance of it, I wasn't going to even call them a reader. Yeah, I don't think that's what they, have been taught to take from it. So you said you wanted to spring other places.
Could I respond to Zombie real quick, though?
Yeah, sure.
Just to give it, we're talking about through a whole big span of time, whoever wrote it and motivations for writing it and then how it's used today, et cetera. Just looking at it, you have a few people, a few hundred people, the apostles, and then a few hundred followers and all that. They're basically the teaching is as long as it's not sin, go along with it. You're submissive to the government. Romans 13 is probably a better example of something used to pacify people because we saw that right after the big hurricane and the martial law in Louisiana and all that.
They use everything they can.
Sure, yeah, but for most Christians or serious people, serious Christians, not like we just. I don't even need to go into that a tangent about that, but for the serious ones, you live in a time of the great falling away, the great apostasy, and the punishments that we endure on a very collective basis for falling away from the truth. So we embrace the lies, and then we run with all that. And we see all this in fakeology, you know, questioning all these lies all the time. So what I wanted to illustrate is just, you can't, like, we're supposed to confront things on a very bold basis, as Ophalus has been pointing out, or trying to assert. And we live in a society where, I mean, the control structures are immense. So, like, a lot of us, even him and I, or whoever that is dedicated and believing in all this, you know, we're still guilty of cowardice when we shouldn't have been cowards, or being quiet when we shouldn't have been quiet, or that sort of thing. But
it's the most important tenet of Christ is to never be a coward. Like, literally, sure, die, yeah, to speak the truth.
But all I'm trying to get at is,
guilty of it.
We have this, yeah,
have
this
you
control.
Been tried in a car? It's easy to talk. It's easy to talk, you know, from armchair warriors, you know, sitting there in front of your fucking, you know, monitor or what the fuck, you know. But I mean, you know, step outside those boxes, and what do you have, you know?
Well, all I wanted to point out was, you know, there is another book. Zarek talked about a book, the Prologue of Orit. There is another book called Resistance to Evil by Force. And it, the whole premise of being a pacifist or not resisting evil is exemplified in Tolstoy, Leo Tolstoy. And this book basically confronts that whole entire idea.
Tolstoy was a Jewish, like, operator.
Tolstoy is poison. But anybody who goes down that rabbit hole and, like, you know,
like, you have to, I realize, mean, you the know, past, like, it's 400 a couple years, poison. There's been, like, Jewish writers trying to undermine God and the Western ideals.
Sure, yeah, sure. But all I wanted to get at was the whole crux of the book is it's written for soldiers. It's written for people fighting physically against the Red Army and stuff. But the whole crux of the book is toward the person reading to confront evil in yourself first. And so it goes along with things like forgiveness and stuff. But you... It extends outward from there, so if you're not going to allow evil the majority place in your heart or your life, then it does extend outward. You know, you got family, absolutely, defend your family. You got your church, you defend your church, and that sort of thing. So, I don't think it's about submission to evil, but you have to expect in the modern, what we would call godless authorities running things, that deception is going to be present. We see that
it's forefront.
Not following truth is going to be present. We see that. So, I mean, basically, yeah, you just kind of have to live honorably on your own, like, you know, not on your own, but, you know, you have to live honorably in this world, even though it's so effed up. So,
what do you have? You have a nation of cowards, or if you, you know, what do you have? You have nothing. You have cowards,
and that's what they do. I totally get you with that, but I don't see that as the purpose of text.
Well, I'm not contradicting you. I'm just saying,
even in, like, history, or even nowadays, like, we have what Romans 13 used against us, but we're not to follow sin. So, like,
even in the Maryland Constitution, this is embodied. I mean, the Constitution was supposedly written, you know, with a Christian, lean. And the Maryland Constitution, the original one, you won't find this in the current one. In the preamble, it says one of the lines is passive resistance or non-resistance to arbitrary power is absurd.
Yeah. But all I'm getting at is just the passage has a specific context. Yes, it's going to be misused. Yes, we've seen these things misused, like Romans 13, submission to the state. You know, you're supposed to submit to
authority in like a God-given sense. So like if the Roman state is pagan and says, you know, pay a tax, you know, okay, well, you pay a tax. All right. But it doesn't, but then if it tells you to do active evil or to go out of your way to do evil or wear some garment as a ritual of submission to evil, then you're not supposed to do that. And the true ones don't, and the fake ones will. I mean, so I don't really know, you know, it's like we just have to understand the times we live in as well, you know, read the signs of the times and all that. That's a big part of Christ teaching, along with turning the other cheek to one who's back to you.
Well said, Caroline, and I think that speaks to the original premise, right? It's about, we started this off with trying to talk about if the Bible would be used or could be used or was, you know, written this idea. So, you know, we don't have to like stop people commenting here, but Zombie, just so we know where we're moving forward, you know, this is your premise here. Can you tell us where you were thinking to take this, you know, because it seems like we're in pretty much in agreement here, but where were you thinking this could springboard to as further conversation?
Well, it just got me thinking about how it's used today in all aspects of life, even in the fakeology arena. To use one example that comes to mind, some of you might be familiar with Tim Osman and IPS, the Infinite Plane Society. So a couple of years back, he had a catchphrase, which was to stockpile popcorn, not ammo. Right. And it's just, it always struck me as basically telling people, do nothing about the situation. Just observe it. Keep letting it happen. And I'm not sure if even he is aware of that or if he's like actively trying to get people to do nothing, but that is the outcome of stockpiling popcorn instead of ammo, is that nothing will change and it will just continue on the same path. And of course, it's a foregone conclusion. If nobody does anything about it, then those things will happen and they will materialize.
That's a very important realization.
And that's the knock on the spiritual love and light new age thing. It's all, hey, the Pleiadians are coming. They're going to save us. Yeah, sure they are.
And you know, skeptics, other skeptics like maybe John Le Bon, for example, who will say, well, you know, do you really think people are going to wake up and do anything? Again, like that's sort of putting the idea in people's heads that it's just hopeless. You can't do anything. You can't do anything to change the situation. And the only reason that is the case is because so many people subscribe to this pacification, this turn the other cheek ideology, instead of actually taking action against the people who are sinning against them.
May I take this within a Christian, where it's been used in a quote Christian context to deceive and to actually do what you posited it's about, like actually getting people to be enslaved. There's a huge thing. There's this whole rapture. It's in the evangelical context, and they use this to stick your head in the sand, or like people might be talking. They're like end times obsessed, and you know, like from a different view, say, oh yeah, we're all in the end times or whatever. But the context is you're going to be escaping. You're going to be escaping, and you're going to fly up or whatever to heaven. And you're not going to endure a hard time. And that's never been the case in, like, even Christian history. and it's not actually taught. It's like a special idea. But the whole thing I see in this is, aside from worship of Satan's chosen ones, is to actually get them to not to just go along. You know, go along with whatever the state or whatever the system says. Don't even speak against it, really, unless you're on, like, you know, some, like, Republicans chat room or something. And, just, you know, stick your head in the sand. You know you're all going to be raptured up out of things. And that's the goal. That's what I see in my family, you know, like, those that believe in that sort of thing. And, totally like disarming, you know, slave conditioning idea.
Do as you're told, and the rewards come later.
Can you give us any proof of the rapture in the Bible?
I thought you made an excellent point. Not sure. Appreciate that, because I agree with you all the way.
What point were you talking about, Fox 7?
his point about the potential danger of the pre-tribulation rapture idea of being bailed out before any hard times come. Cause that's why I've tried to warn people myself of for years now. I'm so concerned that a lot of people believe so firmly in the pre-trib rapture that if it doesn't come to pass that way, in other words, if the rapture happens at the end of the tribulation, or even in the middle of the tribulation, like after things start going down, that the pre-trib folk are going to be so distraught that a lot of them are going to abandon the faith because they weren't spiritually ready.
Plus, why bother? Why bother resisting or living like, you know, you have to do the right thing any particular day? What if you know you're going to be whisked away? You know, if that's your faith. Your faith is you're not going to suffer, like we're all going to be out of here. Then why do anything? You're already enslaved by the time it happens.
I think that's a great point too. And it's like how this type of, manipulation can be used from multiple different angles. It's like, you know, if you think it matters, you still can't do anything. So be pacifist. If you think it doesn't matter, be pacifist. If you think you'll be saved, be pacifist. If you don't think you'll be saved, it doesn't matter what you think anyway, because you won't, nothing you can do to change it. Be pacifist.
Observation, citation, and demonstration. If we don't have that, I don't see what the point is of speaking about, some pre-trib rapture.
Agreed. And, you know, the point in this conversation is really to discuss how we see the mass hordes around us, everybody's doing, nothing or seemingly the wrong things for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, I was just speaking as a tool for conditioning for enslavement, basically.
Yeah, you made your point. Yeah, you made your point well.
I used to think most of my life that we were up against the biblical end times, but given recent events, mostly to do with Russia's standoff against NATO, I'm no longer certain we're quite there yet, because there's quite a few things that have to happen. And one of the chief things is that Russia must become in lockstep with NATO. They have to be absolutely part of the UN and NATO's army.
Now, Fox, two questions or two items to that. I think most people here would agree with where I'm going with the second point, but the first point is I agree with you. It could be 150 years, and I think the timescales that these things go on are sometimes lost on us, and the timescale of the controllers and the planners, I think, can easily be lost on us, because the average American or European or Australian or Asian person with a family, they're not planning three generations ahead. Or it seems like the controllers do. And the second thing is, you said that, I'm not going to make this, I want to make this point concise, but I'm not going to so easily. So, a lot of people here might say that they're already in lockstep, that this is, what we're seeing is all planned, coordinated, and it's been lockstep for 25 years. And it's a show to keep us think that there is actually conflict.
You've seen that picture with George W. Bush and Putin at their little WF meeting, and they're wearing wizard robes.
Sure.
Yeah, they got arms around each other, and they're wearing their little wizard robes.
Yeah, and a lot of people here, I think, would think that those guys don't even matter. They're not pulling strings. Someone's pulling their strings. They're actors. You know, they're there for us to see, so we have something to waste our time focusing on. So, you know, I think you're right about what is supposed to happen first, but I think it was a solid argument that it's already happened.
Yeah, I mean, the tables could flip, especially if it's all an act. Who knows? Putin could get disappeared, or he could see the light, or it could be.
Well, I think the Korea missile thing is proof it's all an act, because it's like, you know, oh, we've got missile defense, so we don't have to worry about Korea till they shoot a missile, and then everybody's scared. It's all hoaxy.
To me, the proof of them being a part of the same system was pushing
the same narrative and the same solution for COVID.
After the break.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
East Coast USA, we're hitting midnight, so it's now Thursday, April 6th. We've got a large panel. It's an ongoing discussion, so continue.
So the funny thing is that at the time, just prior to World all the major European monarchs were basically cousins. They're all related. I don't think we've really grappled with that just quite yet. The implications of that. Hello.
Yeah, you came through pretty clear. Yeah, that's a good point.
So I think not really like really in conversation just quite yet. It's getting there, but I think people are starting to realize like there's a lot more going on than we actualize.
And I think we got you there, but your connection isn't great. And I agree. The thing is, it's like it's a great that's a great argument too. Like, you know, from the even in the truth community or the conspiracy community. It's another argument for being pacifist is like, well, it's too big. There's nothing we can do. They're well past the point that the average guy can do anything. And I think it was Hoover that said, you know, the average man is faced with such a conspiracy that such a grand conspiracy that, you know, he can't even fathom that it would be possible to exist. And yeah, you know, if the monarchs were cousins, let's say that didn't even really happen. That's false history, but they're showing it to us for a reason, right?
Well, let's look at another angle.
Yeah, I mean, you can go ahead and say that was off, but what do you do? What do you do there? Can you prove it? No. Are you proving that you're just saying that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think well said. And I think what do you do about it is we do what we're doing right now. Try to have intelligent conversation about it as best we can.
Look at the result of it. The only ones that are left are the British royal house. Yeah, or, you know, that's the end of that whole conflict. All the Russia's out. They're murdered. Their whole family was murdered. And we in Orthodoxy, we revere them as saints. We know their lives in detail. The German one is out and he lives. And he goes along with sort of the system as it was. I'm not advocating for Hitler in that argument, but he goes along with the system and dies in World War II era, you know, the German dude. The Austrian one's out and they live, and that, you know, I mean, so the only ones that are still around after that conflict are the British. Everyone else is in some sort of republic or communist or, you know what I mean? Like,
what's the message of the gospel? The message of the gospel is to imitate Christ when we can move mountains.
The message of the gospel is forgive yourself.
And death has been overcome.
I resent so much the manipulation of Christ. Like, Christ was so straightforward, and there's so much manipulation to make it other than what it was, and it's infuriating. Like, I dislike Catholics more than I dislike Jews, and I dislike Jews a lot.
You know, it is, but that speaks to it speaks to its power, right, and its relevance, but it also speaks to the original premise. So Zombie, curious if this helped shed any light, or if you had any other overarching thoughts on the conversation.
I just came back. I've been gone for like 10 minutes on Zoom and stuff.
But your point was still well taken. Well presented. Didn't know if you heard me, Zombie. Curious if this achieved anything for you?
Yeah, sorry. I was struggling to unmute there.
It's okay.
Yeah, I don't know where I was really going with it in the beginning, because we were just sort of chatting casually and it just came up as a point. But I suppose a follow-on would be, what do you do about it? Like, what, is there any point in trying to fight the system? Because it's clearly going to be against you. You're going to be in the majority.
That's another part of Christianity, where it tells you the path to heaven is narrow and most will not find it. Like, you just kind of have to accept that the world's going to go to hell, which I also understand why it could be comprehended as like the Jewish subversion, like just accept hell on earth because it's your destiny. Right. Like I'm completely against that. I think you should fight it, which is my number one opposition to people who say like Christ says turn the other cheek. No, he doesn't say you turn the other cheek. He says fight. He says stand up for what's right. But he also says in Revelations, everybody who stands up for righteousness will be the enemy and evil prevail ultimately. So you can do both simultaneously. And ultimately, Revelations tells you that evil is going to win.
It only wins up to a point, right?
Well, it wins ultimately as far as our perception goes, frankly.
In terms of the military logistics.
In the battle of our lives, it will win. But here's the conundrum. The conundrum is it now? Like, is now the battle? Because he wants you to believe it's always a battle. He always wants you to believe you're always going to lose. But you should always fight. Because it doesn't have to be now. Like, the Bible tells you Revelation is going to come and we're going to lose. But it could be 1,000 years from now. It could be 100 years from now. It could be right now. But you should never stop fighting it, because that's what martyrdom's all about, and that's what being Christian's all about. Is like, even if it's now, you should still stand up for Christ, because worst case scenario, you die.
We live in the West,
but also,
and we don't hear about the East, but there's an Eastern Christianity. And when we come to understand that Eastern Christianity, it all starts to fall in place. But we don't get that in a Western schooling and that sort of thing. But if you were raised outside of the United States, you might get a little bit more of that history the way it was, but the Catholic Church wasn't there from the beginning, and they weren't there until the Franks invaded, until like 800 AD and conquered Rome, and then like set up this like fucking placate in advance that's been like just promoted through the Rockefeller fucking schooling of the West, you know? That people have no conception of the, you know, true Eastern Christianity or the tragedy that is Syria today. And I'll just, you know.
I'm not turning around
any better. Fucked up.
The church begins with a few people suffering toward it and purifying themselves. They end up having the whole empire and basically the whole world as it was known in that, you know, sort of European, North African, Middle Eastern area. That whole thing became Christian. It wasn't through like violence, fighting in that way. It became the order of the day, the old order, if you will. And then in the modern context, you're not really to look at it like, we have a book called Orthodoxy and the Religion of the Future. And basically the whole context is, okay, we have, in that scope, we have the truth, and then the future at some point, undefined, it becomes the
Antichrist.
But on the very front of that book is an icon, and the icon is
Archangel Michael back and pitching all that world into overthrowing that whole world, basically. So no,
Orthodoxy in America. That was the pre-zine to the Death for the Worlds was Orthodoxy in America. And those zines, they weren't really zines, but they were more like a magazine, I guess.
Zines on zines.
You know? They still got those, man. I got the PDFs of a bunch of them.
You printed me
that's so hard to come by. all that old stuff. Somebody who was talking, Sarah from Rose, I'm sure that's.
It's really hard to have any conversation with anybody about anything unless you realize.
Not sure.
There's Jewish propaganda constantly publishing things on the topic.
And nobody else can hear me.
Yeah, Zarek, you're just kind of droning. You're kind of just droning on, not listening to other people that are going back and forth here. We heard your points about the book. Well, Faust, I agree. What do you think is the current biggest issue with that in general?
Well, like I said, they're constantly pushing things to, turning the other cheek. You literally had the Vice President of the United States a couple of years ago on national television telling people, hey, you should get vaccinated. That's what the Bible says. You got to support your neighbor and get vaccinated. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? You're just making
It was like George Bush on 9/11, right? You know, there was a moment there where he could have said something useful. What the fuck does he tell us? Go shopping. Go to the mall. Useless piece of crap.
No, all the powers that be have been falsely representing Christianity for decades. They've been falsely representing everything for decades, but Christianity is the most important thing. And that's why orthodoxy is so important. Just read the New Testament. The New Testament holds up without dispute. I've argued with dozens upon dozens of people about semantic arguments on the New Testament, and they all fail. There's no argument to be had. It's very straightforward. It talks about being subverted. It just talks about everything that's relevant to our modern life. And truth will set you free. And ultimately, you have martyrdom or complacency. Is what comes from it. Unfortunately, there isn't much discussion to really be had. Academia wants to pretend we're going to write 30-page papers about this and this and this and this and this, but it's very straightforward. Everything that's true is very straightforward.
Well, and I think the big thing about the modern society that we've all mentioned today is that, you know, it's a 24-hour cable news thing is a real good example of this, is that We get this bombardment of Putin, of the president of Ukraine,
here and not realize Ukraine war is fake nonsense.
Yeah, I mean everybody does, but that's what I'm going with the fake media. I'm hearing near. I live in Maryland. I'm hearing about what the prime minister of New Zealand is doing. Well, no, that too. But I'm also hearing about, the president of Ukraine. What is that guy going to actually do that is going to affect my life other than raise my tax bill by a couple, 5 cents a year? Nothing. And we're meant. 5 cents. He's not going to do anything. You know, the politicians here, it doesn't matter. You know, they would find a way to raise it either way. My point is that we're shown this big world that we can't have an effect on. I think logistically, it's improper and it's silly to think that we can, band together and have this effect. We can affect our local area, and that's what the pacifism keeps us from doing. The complacency keeps us from actually, if we all bound together in our local areas and did things local, the world could get better because we just have better areas that would, affect each other, but we don't do it.
By doing that, you get the power to ignore the government.
Exactly. Well, healthy, happy people don't need to buy things from corporations, and they don't need government.
The people that are so obsessed with the liars and the system and what they're saying, if that system was good, they probably wouldn't be doing anything anyways, because they'd be like, oh, everything's all right. So it's almost irrelevant. I mean, it's relevant to this tyranny that they try to get us. They try to shove down our throat the lie, like the big lies that are huge, and the things they try to get us to do in public because of those. But it's not relevant to the truth and how we should live. And the whole idea is, if you do things spiritual, like good in your life, and you try to provide a sort of fence of sanity around your home, then that has an impact on the wider world, even if you're not directly interacting with it.
And that was my point.
You know, it's basically, the spiritual aspect of it. Like in a monastery out in the middle of nowhere, you do have an impact on the wider world, even if it's not. You know, you basically have to have a spiritual outlook on the world and the conflict in that world is spiritual.
About the world, you should just not live in a city, because
that's hard.
You have no power in a city. Like, well, easier said than done. I understand.
Physical. You know, like the whole point I made about, like, you know,
you have the power beginning yourself. Everyone has power.
Sorry, yeah. So
we lost you there for a second, Carolinas.
The whole point about the beginning is it's just a few people, and they're not actually trying to take over the empire of Rome and all this. But they're looking at the end time, looking at purifying themselves and their communities and their people or their nation or whatever. They just try to live that truth. And they don't sacrifice it. You know, you have the whole martyrs and all that sort of stuff. But not everyone dies. You know, not everyone is dying for the truth.
That was a great point about spirituality, too. And I think this goes back to the original
premise. They're taking over the whole place, basically. You know, if not through plotting and conspiring to do it, but...
But through just setting the ball in motion, and that spirituality is destroyed by these same forces. I mean, the way that modern Christianity and Catholicism is taught, there's no spiritual component. You know, I mean, it's very mechanical. And I always think of the, you know, most of the Christian churches. I've been to some Orthodox services, and that has been kind of completely the opposite in comparison, but. Most, I think, the modern churchgoers' experience in Christianity is encapsulated by the quote from the movie Dogma. Gene Garofalo said it well, is that Catholics don't celebrate their faith. They mourn it.
Yeah.
I think...
I'm an aggressive Christian. I don't go to church. I go to, like, a Bible discussion on Discord. And I think it was Paul that said that the church is anytime two or more gather in my name. Like, anytime people gather to talk about God as a church. And the church itself is just an institution that is majorly influenced by the Catholics or the state. And I don't feel comfortable with any of them.
Well, institution is the problem, right?
Yeah, it's the problem with most things. But I absolutely love getting together with people on the internet and talking about the Bible and talking about God. And that's church. That's church, and as far as the Bible is concerned, and it furthers my faith, and I'm very happy with it.
I think the biggest problem with the church as a whole, and I don't mean the earthly institution, but the spiritual, is that the church is not willing anymore to confront evil.
Well, yeah.
It's not willing to look evil in the eye and call it by its name.
So I was living in Portland, Oregon during COVID, and there was one church in the entire state, as far as I know, but one distinct church that refused to shut down for the COVID lockdowns, which in Portland, Oregon, they shut down for like almost 2 years. Like restaurants were not open.
After the break.
Were not open.
Hi, I'm Baby.
Something tried.
This is Lost Fighter Phallus.
I'm Nightly News, Frank McManus.
Adam Miller.
You are listening to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com.
Thursday, April 6th. A little bit after midnight, EDT. We have a large panel here, and we're discussing Christianity. And I believe it was O'Fallis was talking right at the break. So, O'Fallis, please continue.
Yeah. There's this one church that, the only church in Portland, that refused to shut down. And what they did was they took the tilth and they paid the fines, because the state was charging fines to every business that stayed open during the COVID lockdown in Portland, Oregon. And during this time, the amount of people going to that church increased dramatically. So they just took all the tilth, paid their fines, and just kept doing a no mask service. Where every other church pretty much in the state either wasn't open or forced you to wear masks. And this one church was like, no masks, that's bullshit. And come all ye Christians. And they like literally had lines out the door. They were crowded throughout the entire facility. And like people flocked to the truth. When evil is present and foreboding, people flock to the truth. People that want it, it's there, and they go to it.
So I have a question, O'Fallis, for you.
They paid $500,000 in fines at least. And they paid it all with tilth.
If somebody else wanted to speak, go ahead.
I experienced the very similar thing in Tennessee. And I looked all over high and low for a church that followed the word of God, that didn't have a woke agenda. And everyone that I found was implementing some kind of restricted COVID policies or masking policies. And I found one that really looked good to me. It spoke to me in my area. And so I ended up emailing the pastor and asking him directly, because the church website did not say anything about any kind of COVID policies. And I wanted to make sure that was the case. In other words, that they just weren't mentioned. They happened to not mention it on their website or not. And he responded back and actually said, this is probably not the church for me, because they do have those policies in place. And when I questioned him on it, he implied that he had no fear whatsoever of the virus. And keep in mind, this is like the first 6 months of this whole outbreak. He straight up said that he was concerned with the repercussions from the government, and he compared it to being in Vietnam. And,
absolutely. And, like, the government is shutting out everybody. Like, literally, dozens of thousands of dollars of fines if you open your business.
And I love how liquor stores were essential businesses, but places of worship were closed.
He tried to compare it to Vietnam and saying, you know, would I condemn the Vietnamese, you know, for operating their church low key because of the government coming against them? Or am I really saying that they should just do what they're going to do and let the chips fall where they may? And I made the point to him that, well, this isn't Vietnam yet. This is America. And if people like you, who have an honored position in God's kingdom, to stand up and do something, we're going to become like North Korea before it's over with. And of course, he didn't have a response to that.
Yeah, he didn't respond.
You know, so just because I'm something chilling real quick.
If you want a link, DM me. I'll send you Pastor Brian. Like, he's an amazing pastor. Like, he literally stood up through the entire COVID lockdown, which in Portland, Oregon lasted 2 years. Like, people weren't even allowed, like, kitchens weren't even allowed to be open for 2 years. It was crazy. But he was amazing. Like, he just stood up against everything and just counted on his congregation to pay the, because he knew he was going to get fined. He told them, like, I'm going to get fined. And he did get fined endlessly, because they just fined anybody that stayed open. And his congregation came, much more than was possibly able to fit, and his fines were paid off, and he just kept doing it. And you know, it was like a whole year. It was a whole year where the entire state was shut down. No other church operated letting people in, and he did. And he just kept having people come. He just kept having people come and loving it. And it was a beautiful thing to see.
I find it funny that close to the beast here, you know, right outside of D.C., things didn't stay shut down nearly as long, and the mask mandates went away relatively fast. And, you know, it's funny how this is the place where the power is, you know, supposedly. They didn't, you know, impose that on their families nearly as much. So the question I had of Fallas is like, and I don't mean this as like a challenge, like you're doing wrong. I'm just, you know, kind of curious is that like, so, you know, disgusting, I think, is the problem, you know, with Discord in general. It can be a time sink. And do you think that, like, you know, I know we all suffer from this. It's like everybody seems to be real people that seek real truth, or, you know, there's not a lot of us. We're geographically isolated from each other more than it, you know, it should be. It seems like there's like one of us. And where are the 15 guys from New York? If there's millions of people there, where's any truthers from there? I mean, there's more guys that we have on this server, or any truth
server. Brainwashed.
Yeah, I mean, there's more people from Melbourne than there is from New York. But the question is, like, do you think that, you know, just
of truthers are from Florida? I'm pretty sure.
Do you think, there's a state that went, you know, defied all the bans, and it's still a good question as to like why that, you know, they let that happen. But what I was asking is that, do you think that just, you know, discussing Bible stuff on Discord, you know, is that a good use of time, you know, beyond a certain point? I mean, we're talking about what to do.
Time to talk about the Bible. Understood.
But if you could take that knowledge and use it to better your local community, I'm sure, and I know you do, I'm sure you would. I'm just saying, have you, you know, personally thought about, again, it's not a challenge, I'm just curious, have you thought about like where, you know, the scholarship ends and, you know, the practice begins in that regard, as far as like, you know, trying to find something to do with what, you know, to help, like with what we're talking about?
I mean, you use it in your everyday life. Like, I'm going to use my girlfriend as an example.
And like here, you're bringing it to another server that focuses on other things. And thank you for that. Yeah, sure.
So in my life, I bring up God as often as I can. Like, I'm not like evangelical. I don't shove it on people, but people are like, when you're hanging out and drinking, people are always asking questions, and they're expressing their like doubts and insecurities and whatnot. And I almost always bring up Jesus Christ, because if you have the knowledge of the forgiveness you deserve for yourself and for your peers, you have a lot more peace in life. And most people struggle with that. They struggle with it immensely. And I try and tell people that all the time. I don't do it aggressively. I don't like, you need to accept Jesus Christ. But I just bring it up. I'm like, maybe you should consider what Jesus provides for you, because it's really great. But then
if we want to humble ourselves, all it really takes is holding the door open for everyone everywhere.
What it takes is being willing to
humble yourself. That's all it takes.
The biggest problem most people have is they aren't willing to humble themselves.
And that's a good thing.
Their ego is greater than their problems. And most people need to give up their ego, which usually that comes through suffering. Like, people don't just give up their ego. They have to go through trauma to give up their ego, unless, like, in majority of cases, they have to suffer to give up their ego and seek Christ. But I just tell people. But then there's also times, like, I had a 4th of July party at my dad's house, and he has friends over there, and they're, like, older people. I usually hang out with older people. And somebody said something about the Pope dying, and I was like, he was a terrible person. I just started talking shit about the Catholic Church. I mean, I was like, shut the fuck up. You can't do that. They're Catholic. It's like, well, if they're Catholic, they could defend their beliefs. Like, I think the Catholic Church is terrible. They think it's a good thing. I don't. If they want to argue for it, they're welcome to, but It's fucking terrible. I'm glad the Pope died. I hate all the popes. All the popes are terrible. And he has other like old friends who are like 70 years old. And they're like pro Biden. I'm like, Biden has literally destroyed the country. You want to talk about the energy crisis? Biden literally shut down oil pipelines where he could have been self-sustainable. Like they're terrible. If you want to have these beliefs, argue them. But the thing is, these people don't have the capability or information to argue them. They're just ingrained in a mindset and they get offended, sure, and they get mad. And then my dad gets mad at me for ruining the interactions with his friends. And I'm a bad guy, but
it's because their internal security needs are served by the hive thing, and they would rather have that security than go out on a limb and think for themselves.
Yeah, but they're old. Like it.
Yeah, but there's plenty of people my age and younger that do it too. I mean, you know, old people are set in their ways, but we have people here like Zarek, who's I think a little older than me, and you know, he thinks like you do.
I mean, obviously, I don't excuse them. I still challenge them. I'm not like an asshole about it. Like, I just present it. And if.
Well, you ruined the party, bro.
Yeah, I ruined the party. But also, I get really drunk and make the party lively. Like, I do both.
But I think there's room for that, too. I mean, if the party, it's a flip of the table thing. If the party needs to be ruined, so be it, you know? And there is a lot of, like, I think that's the balls that a lot of people lack. I mean, if. Yeah, if you're going to have a position, defend it.
A lot of things. Like, if everybody's like, Justin, O'Fallis, shut up. O'Fallis, shut up. We're trying to have fun. Okay, I'm sorry. I just thought I was talking to this guy about something. Like, I'll back off. But,
but listening to people tell you you're wrong, and when you're saying, okay, what's wrong? They're like, well, I don't want to talk about it. That's not a good argument. And I know that we all deal with that.
Yeah. But when you're dealing with like family and friends, you don't push it. Like if they don't want to deal with it, you don't push it.
And that's a good lesson. It's a good lesson that I think a lot of people in this community have been better served learning earlier. I've heard a lot of complaints lately of people said that I've lost my friends and family over the COVID stuff or over flat earth and, you know, this and that. And like, you know, I've had struggles. But I like you, eventually there's a time not to push it because the relationships are more important than their beliefs.
Absolutely. And the thing is, if you present the arguments and at the time they're not willing to engage them and you back off and you just like play darts or something and have fun, a couple months down the road, you already planted the seed in their head and then they'll come back a couple months later and ask questions and be interested.
Now, the problem I've had with that I've said over and over again, this is what happens over and over with me, is that people in my personal life, professional life, and just my casual life where I'm just acquaintances will come to me as like COVID's going down or something's happening. And they're like, you know, you were right about the last thing. You're right about the mortgage crisis. What should we do here? I'll explain it. They'll agree and they'll be awake. I'll see the light in their eyes. I'll see them. Oh man, all the politics is fake. I get it now. And they hit they hit the snooze button and they go back to sleep.
Yeah.
Big picture though. I mean, like,
you can only ask for so much.
You need to principles work toward a community, move toward people you can meet up with in person, because this whole online thing is
temporary.
Yeah, well, long term wise, it is. And as far as if you want to be Christian, you need a community looking toward family. So if you're building that in your own home, that's great. Hopefully, you can have a church. Churches is congregation in the Old Testament. So it's always used congregation, blah, blah, blah. It's community. So you got to try to
around you that you can trust to have the same belief as some.
Fallis, what did you say there? I didn't hear that.
You want to surround yourself with the most amount of people possible that have the same belief system, which is what a church is.
Yeah, and I think the belief system is important there as a distinction from just general beliefs, because, you know, I have a group of guys that are, you know, some of them are single, some of them are family, and we have a shit hit the fan plan. You know, we have a plan to go to the mountains, a plan to go to the boat, a plan to go to the farm, whatever happens. We know what to do, even if everything goes down. And some of them think I'm crazy. Some of them think I'm fucking crazy about like thinking NASA is fake. But their belief systems in regards to, you know, friendship. Yeah. Friendship, family, Christianity, and like, you know, how we are brothers, that we're very aligned on. And that's what's important. I think it's important up to a point to not let the other stuff about conspiracy and about truth and about reality to get in your way of forming those relationships.
Yeah.
So it's important to focus on what the end result matters is protecting your family.
And what you can control, right? You're not going to control that this guy does or does not believe in flat Earth.
Yeah, it's irrelevant. Like, it's in the spectrum of what we're dealing with, it literally doesn't matter.
No matter how much truth somebody comes to know or no matter how well they understand flat Earth and every new discovery about the model, and no matter how good of a prepper they are, practically speaking, they don't have Jesus Christ as their Savior and their Lord, then they're lost and they'll die in their sins. So
it doesn't make them invaluable in your peer group.
It's
never too late. Like if they have the values of seeking to be secure and work with their neighbors to survive problems they expect to happen, even if they're not a Christian now, maybe once it happens they'll find Christ. Like you can't just give up on these people.
Can I possibly get a word in edgewise? No.
I was kind of responding.
I'm listening.
Okay. So thinking about Jesus Christ, like the way you guys talk about Christ is inspiring. But anyone who's not raised Christian.
Hey, uninstall. You're not coming through.
He's coming through fine.
Robot time.
It's all robot. Right.
Talk to you later then.
Try one more time. The talk to you later came through as it always does.
Huh. One more time. How's this? Hello.
Not great. We're trying to see if it clears up.
Nope, not great. All right. Bye. See you later.
I literally understand everything.
This is not working.
Even with
the try dropping out.
I heard. See you later.
Damn it, Wild Times. You ruin everything.
Yeah, I know. Fox, you were saying?
I was saying, I'm not saying I would like exclude a productive group of men from getting together to discuss practical plans for if and when things go south. That's not what I was. The point I was trying to convey. I was just saying, like, we gotta be patient with people, but we gotta never stop trying to, express the importance, like the urgency of getting right with God. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I don't know that anybody thought you suggested otherwise.
He kind of did. But that's part of the teachings of Jesus is that they may not know him now, but if they're good people, like the beauty of Christianity to me is that people that have never known Christ, who have never like become Christians, can still follow the objective morality that is Christ, and they're still saved. Like that's what's so great about Christianity. It's just objective truth. Like you can be a perfect Christian without ever hearing about Christianity. And all you have to do is follow like the basic objective morality that is obvious to every child that comes to exist.
Well, it depends on the level of revelation the individual has. If they don't know.
No, I don't agree. I think it's inherent in every individual with any spirit whatsoever. Like the only reason you commit sin is because you've been traumatized against the basic human spirit.
Like, I disagree. I think the natural state, and I know the natural state is fallen. And to listen to the natural man is to, like, you know, just be in vibe with the fallen world.
The Bible says everybody's a fallen man. Mm-hmm. I understand this concept, but after the break...
Hi, I'm Chad from Northern California.
Priya. Hi, this is Errol C. Naeem.
Rick from Paul Macquarie.
I'm Eric.
You are listening to Fakeologist Radio at Fakeologist.com.
So yes, according to the Bible, the natural state of man is fallen. We're all sinners. But we're all inclined to sin, but we're all also inclined to have the Holy Spirit and to be inclined to do goodness in the world. Like,
what do you mean we're inclined to sin?
Well, that's what the Bible teaches, is we're all sinners. So that's what he was saying when I was bringing up that.
That's the difference between being a sinner. I mean, nobody is perfect, then rather than being inclined to sin. I don't know that
we're all tempted all day, every day, all of our life.
Yeah,
we're all
tempted to sin. I'll agree
my point is that people that have never heard about Jesus Christ, who are also tempted to sin all day, every day, they also have a natural inclination in, like, their mind and spirit to avoid that sin and do good things, like, without ever hearing about Jesus Christ. Like, I know Jesus Christ taught to spread the word, and that's a good thing, but people that never heard the word of Jesus Christ still naturally have the insight to know what is and is not godliness.
Like, well, and that comes from the same thing you said earlier, from suffering. I was just saying, but Fox, I can elaborate, but yeah, Fox, go ahead and respond.
Okay. I have to respond because a few points were made.
I know that you had a few points to make it before that even started, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll try to take them one at a time. The invisible things of God are made manifest so that none have excuse. And while I agree that if somebody's never heard of Christ, they've never heard the gospel, they're not going to be held accountable to something that they literally do not know, have knowledge of. But Jesus is very, very clear when he says that no one is good. No, not one. We are all fallen. We are all of a sinful nature. And it's only through the grace of God, through his reaching out to us, that we can accept the gifts of grace that he extended to us. And then if we choose to embrace him and we choose to seek righteousness through faith in him, then that's when the Holy Spirit can work on us. Same thing is true for people who've never even heard of them. God reaches out to those people too. And I truly believe God will lead that person to the gospel, or if they're in a place where in the world that it's just not physically possible at that time, then God will still extend his Holy Spirit to that person because they chose him. So I think that's where the free will comes in. But it's definitely a solid teaching of the scriptures all throughout that man is a fallen nature, and left to our own devices, all we'll do is destroy ourselves.
It's temptation feels good, and so what I said about suffering, just to circle back a little bit, you said that the ego fails. Yeah, I think I agree. The ego is lost through suffering, and is only through knowing what suffering is that, like, I think it elucidates what objective morality is, because when you can really recognize it without the ego, you can start to look, I mean, if the ego even exists. I don't like a lot of those philosophical concepts in general. I think they're meant to keep you in your head.
There's a lot of philosophical arguments about ego that are really gay, but ego is definitely real.
They're also fake too. So,
when you're out in public, can you hold the door open for everyone who passes through?
It eventually,
yes. Eventually, that's a good thing. You have to go to the grocery store. You know,
eventually you have to go into the grocery store too. I think you can start to see the objective morality because you don't, because you don't let all the other patients get in the way of recognizing suffering. And then you realize like everything you should be doing to try to reduce suffering. And I think that's where most of the objective morality comes from. Because if you look around and do everything you can without sacrificing yourself to help everyone else, reduce or, you know, avoid suffering, you know, you're pretty much hitting all the moral stuff on the head.
You are hitting most of it on the head, but without faith, it is impossible to please God.
Well, but you also said that people that are not exposed or will not be held to account for that. But I think this, what I was saying about what Ophalus said, is that kind of coincides because, you know, you don't need the book or you don't need to be told about Christ to figure this out.
Faith and hope are not enough without a love for the truth.
Christ is objective morality. All the teachings of Christ are just objective truth that is available to all people across the world, regardless of if they've ever heard his word, because it's just deducible from living and experience.
Yeah, and you know, with suffering, because if you know what it is, you should try to. Everybody reduces it for themselves. You know, you avoid pain, avoid suffering, avoid hunger, and you know, not just being and selfish.
Forgiveness is a very important part of that. Like a society doesn't prosper if it doesn't understand what forgiveness is.
Yeah, I mean, if you hold that resentment in your heart, you're not in a condition to help others.
I feel like we've gone into this weird. Okay, so
before you say that, Carolinas, I agree. I think we've covered this topic well. And after you're done, let's hear what Zombie has to say. We can move on to a different premise or a different topic if we want, because. You know, I think we're all in pretty much agreement here, and it was like a good side avenue from where we started about the Bible being written, you know, to affect society in regards to pacification.
Did somebody cover the aspect that the Bible isn't pacification? Because I walked away multiple times.
No. I mean, I think you covered it well at the beginning, and I think you made. Major points. Well, it's just, it's a, you know, a question of like, the Bible is a certain thing. And, you know, it's like,
I really hate how people present the Bible as pacification. Like they use that turn the other cheek thing so much. And it's just, it's not Christian. Like you don't turn the other cheek. You fucking stand up.
The turning to the other cheek just referred to when a man insults another man in public. That's what turning the other cheek was. It had nothing to do with having patience.
I'm going to keep
talking now. I'm not going to let you keep talking over me. That's just rude. You can kick me out if you want. But turning the other cheek.
No, Fox, you're not going anywhere. You can finish your points.
Okay. So turning the other cheek has to do when a man is insulting another man in public. It is a show. It's a display of humility, but it has nothing to do with protecting yourself from physical violence or protecting your loved ones from physical violence. Jesus never once condemns violence itself. There was hundreds of times throughout the scriptures that he could have easily just condemned violence outright. He could have just made a pacifist statement, but he never did, and that's for a reason. At the same time, you know, he never says to use violence for the advancement of the kingdom. That would be wrong.
But, yeah, Fox, in the beginning, I think you missed a lot of the beginning where Ophalus really took us through the teachings in regards to the difference between turn the other cheek and the flipping of the tables and like what those were really supposed to mean. And it sounds like you guys are kind of like on the same page with that.
Yeah, we probably are.
Flip them all.
You know, there's somebody in the server that said it to me the other day. I'm not here to help. I'm here to destroy. And yeah, you know, I mean, this place doesn't need help. It needs change. So curious, because I still see you here. I know you're busy, Mr. Dave, Mr. Zombie, but you know, I think your premise was covered well. And like, we got to look from, you know, guys that are, I would consider, you know, modern day scholars and study the Bible. you know, how they think about it. And it was a good talk about that.
Yeah, thank you to Ophelos for clarifying for me. My perspective comes from one of what I've experienced myself. I'm not a biblical scholar and I was never raised in a religious family. But I don't have that perspective coming from, you know, what the real word of God ought to be. It's more about what I see people doing, you know, what actually practicing in reality. That's where I'm coming from. So it's that difference, I think, that matters, and that's where we should focus our attention. If there is a true way to live one's life, and it's written in the Bible, and there are examples of people actually doing that, like the pastor that you talked about, the church that actually stayed open, that's a great example, right? A good example for other people to follow. So I'm just happy to hear that people are doing it. I'm also concerned that not enough people are doing it as well. Like I still see it as being a tiny minority of people are actually doing what they should be doing. And the vast majority are just toeing the line, which is probably never going to change, but you never know.
But the most hilarious part is the Bible literally tells you that's what's going to happen. Like people are just going to stop listening to the word. People are going to, it's going to be like everybody that follows the word, as like genuine and innocent as it is, are going to be considered enemies. It warns you of the state of being and to not worry about it, frankly, which is an incredible peace of mind.
Well, and
see where the faith comes from now, because you need to believe that it's all going to be okay in the end after death in order to keep plugging away through life and challenging people, you know, challenging the majority. Like, why else would you do it otherwise?
Because most of us, I think, understand how prevalent evil is. Like, even if you don't understand Christ and God, like, you can see how much the world is run by malevolent evil, right? And Christ and Christianity makes that okay because it's ultimately the result. Like, it's unavoidable.
And isn't that the problem?
Judged later.
Isn't that the problem? I mean, like, we understand.
No, in Christianity, it's not the problem, it's the reality.
No, I'm not saying that the problem is, again, misinterpretation of the Bible, like misteaching. Is the problem is that most people don't see that this world is run by malevolent evil. They live in a land of you know, cupcakes and lollipops. Yeah.
But then there's a secondary thing that's very important where people are constantly saying this is the end times. But if you realize that Christ taught you to fight back, maybe this isn't the end times. Maybe we all stand up and we stop it this time. And it's not now. Maybe it's 500 years from now.
And maybe we do. And he comes down and he writes a new Bible for the new future.
We have no idea. But what he told us wasn't to not fight. He told us to stand up for truth. And at the end of time, we would be punished for standing up for truth, but never to stop standing up for truth. Because every time you don't stand up for truth, you enable evil. So, like, it seems like right now could be Armageddon. It seems like right now very easily could be the end of times. Evil is taking over the world. The globalist regime is very powerful and not stopping. But it doesn't mean we can't win. We could very well win. And it could start over and they don't get another chance for another, like, 150 years.
The guys older than me all said that in the 70s. Well, you know, in the 70s, the late 70s, oh man, the globalists have got it. Things are going to collapse. You know, by 1986, we're going to all be living in Montana, having to hunt elk with bows. It's, you know, everything's grids going down. And, you know, that never happened. Right. And so, yeah, it could be the end times. And, but it could not be. And things could not be, you know, what a lot of people say they are. And I think that, it doesn't like change.
What Christianity
it doesn't change our you know, the mandate or the you know, what we have to do.
Exactly. Right. You just don't stop fighting. Because it may seem like the end, but if enough of us stand up, it won't be.
You know, Jordan Peterson says a lot of things that I don't necessarily agree with, but he said one thing one time that I think he hit the nail on the head. He said that people act out their faith. Because when he said
people what their faith?
He said that.
No, he said people that something blank their faith. Could you just repeat it?
I think Ophelos would like to make my point for me since he likes to speak over me so much.
No, I mean, he did speak after me there. I didn't hear.
You're a little sensitive, bud.
you have been interrupting everybody, including him, like a little more than necessary. So chill. Okay, but yeah, Fox. No, we're polite.
No, he waited way too long to respond and still didn't respond.
He backed off to try to be polite. So Fox, if you could repeat that for me, please.
Yeah, Jordan Peterson said that he thinks people act out their faith. And that is absolutely true. I see faith more of what people do rather than strictly what they believe, because what you do incorporates your belief and the action that you decide to take upon that belief. And I find it appalling how weak most Christians are. And I also would go so far as to say that the reason that most people don't understand some of the things that we're talking about is because even though a lot of them profess to be Christian, they're living lives of abject sin, and it's pulled scales over their eyes, and it's made them spiritually blind to the truth.
You know, great word to finish on, truth. That's like, I agree with you about Jordan Peterson. I hate a lot of what he's done to young men, but there's a few things he said. You know, there's always gold nuggets in the chaff, and you know, his comments in his recent, you know, tours before he just became a benzo addicted crybaby about reducing suffering. I think they've been on
prescribed.
Yeah, I know. It's legal. It's a legal drug. Legal addiction. So, but this, so, you know, my three rules for life lately, and it's been for a while. You know, reduce suffering. You know, for you and for others, speak the truth, and have fun. And you know, have fun doesn't mean sin or. You know, do anything that you shouldn't be doing otherwise. But I think Fowles made a lot of good points here that about how Christianity really is, and like faith really is about truth. And you know, that's also a good point, Fox, about like, yeah, people, I wasn't sure where you were going with it till you said it was important. You know, yeah, people act out their faith like it's a show. They don't actually believe it.
It's an image. It gives them position in their community. Because if you're raised into religion instead of finding it, like I was raised without religion and I found it on my own, I'm alone in it. Like nobody in my immediate life shares my religion. And it's like a thing of contest. Like everybody is like, oh no, he's going to go on another Christian rant. But I wasn't raised with any religion. But everybody's raised with religion is surrounded by people that like share this belief system in it. It changes things a lot.
Well, you said something there. Just reminded me of I forget what it was, but it reminded me of a few stories I've heard recently where like the least moral people in, you know, a congregation were the two pastors that were husband and wife. You know, they use their power to. This is just, you know, two examples from, you know, the millions of people around the world, but they use their power to be the lord and queen of that town because they knew everybody's business. Everybody came to them for marriage counseling. You know, they reveled in that, you know, control and importance, which is, you know, the opposite of what they should have been doing.
Yeah, this is why I don't go to church. I have Discord servers where I go talk about God with various people who don't have any authority anywhere, and we just, you know, address scripture as it is and do our best to interpret it and make interpretations about the world.
You know, in 2013, I was going to Transylvania for Halloween, and, you know, being that I've studied religions, been to most of the, you know, major services, major religious services. My buddy is the guy I was traveling with. He's Orthodox Christian. And I, you know, at that point I don't know that I really had known what an Orthodox Christian actually was till he taught me, about a couple years before that. And so, when we were getting ready to go to Transylvania for Halloween, he was like, I'm getting a travel blessing at my parish. Would you like to come get one from the pastor? You know, sure I would, because any other place in the world, I'm not really concerned, but this is a place that would be worth, you know, getting a blessing before we go. So I went and did get, you know, blessed by the pastor and talked to him because he had studied in Romania. And, I actually found the service and the congregation, the parish in general, to be a breath of fresh air, and really focused on rational, useful interpretation of scripture rather than this motion of worship.
Martin Luther is one of my favorite characters in history.
They guided me with psyops. Psychological operations.
They guided me with psyops. They weaponized psychology. Yeah. Hey.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
So Thursday, April 6th, 1 a.m. East EDT. I think we would be served well by a change in direction here, a topic. But it's not necessary. So continue if you would, or we can try to switch gears if people want.
Martin Luther is one of the most interesting characters in history. We all know. We don't all know, but Martin Luther King, the black revolutionary, was kind of like a CIA psyop. Like, he literally had a handler. But Martin Luther before him, the father of Protestantism, who was vehemently against Protestantism, which is hilarious. Like, his only goal was to criticize the church, which we now know as the Catholic Church, but at the time was just the church, because all he had was the church. So he was criticizing Rome and their doctrines. He's one of the most interesting characters in history. I highly recommend his biography and autobiography and all of his teachings and writings, because it's just about a man who participated in the system. And at the time when you were becoming a priest in the Roman Church, it wasn't the Catholic Church at the time, the Roman Church, you weren't allowed to read the Bible. You were allowed to read the writings of previous priests' doctrine, but you weren't allowed to read the Bible after being ordained, which is pretty crazy.
At that time, the common person had zero access as well, right?
Well, yeah, most people couldn't read, and everything was in Latin, which wasn't.
And there was no book. There was no book circulating, like, especially, the Bible, I think, was the first. I think that's
Martin
important.
Luther was actually the first person to translate the Bible into common language. He translated it into German. So,
question for you about him, since you brought up Martin Luther King. People say that it's a possibility that the movie Frozen was called Disney's Frozen. So when you search for Walt Disney freezing his body or freezing his head cryogenically to live forever, it obfuscates the search engine results. Do you think that Martin Luther King was, that was planned for the same reason? Possibly.
Well, I think the things after him were planned, like 1984,
what I'm Wonder Woman movie. But what I'm saying is, so Martin Luther existed, as a historical figure, and then we have Martin Luther King, which existed before the internet. But assuming, 1984 was written early century, assuming, the people that script the reality knew how search engine results were going to work, which I don't think is a crazy assumption to operate off of. You're saying you think it's reasonable what I'm asking, that they purposely linked those two names up.
Absolutely.
Okay, yeah.
Absolutely. Because Martin Luther's opinions, like, if you read his writings and his life, he's an amazing character. Like, he criticizes the system so aggressively. Like, it's hilarious. He gets angry that he never gets to die as a martyr, because Rome calls him to death multiple times and other people save his life, because he's just like, oh yeah, if you're going to kill me because I'm just asking you simple questions, because you won't.
So he wrote about that?
Yeah, a lot.
I wish they would have killed me.
Well,
No, absolutely. He's so upset about it. He writes about it. He writes about everything. He wrote so much. He's a really, he's one of the best characters in history, as far as I'm concerned.
I would take the complete opposite view.
You don't like Pomus?
No, I absolutely do not. I don't like him, and I don't like pretty much any of the reformers. I mean, I would consider it the deformation of the church, not the reformation. It's error added upon error.
Martin Luther's goal wasn't true. He wasn't trying to make the Protestants. Like, he was against it. He was vehemently against it. He was really mad.
He was acting in the interests of the Venetian and the people that you've criticized, the Jay and all that. He's in their interest. What he's about is reducing the church to the book.
Why would you?
So whoever controls the printing of the book controls the church, basically. He actually took away books out of the Bible, but that's not really my crux here. It's the Roman or the Latin church or the Latin heresy from our, like, me and Zarek's, you know, quote, Orthodox view is error. It's already got error at the time Luther comes along. And then he keeps some of these errors and then adds more. That's how I see it.
Of his criticisms was the Catholic Church allowing people to pay money to absolve themselves of sin.
Correct.
Just kind of spiraled out of that because they got so upset at him with that, and he just kept reading the Bible, and he just kept finding more and more errors in the church. Like, do you think it would have been better if the church kept enabling people to pay money to absolve themselves of sin?
I wanted to point out that some of the books of the apocryphal texts that the Orthodox Church still holds to that Luther rejected, was in part because some of those books directly say that giving alms will basically save your soul, which is, you know, completely erroneous to the Gospels, everything that Christ taught. And wasn't it Luther who famously told one of the bishops, like, that a farmer boy would know more scripture than the bishop by the time he was done? Or was that somebody else?
It sounds like something he would say. Because the point, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about a person who never read the Bible might know it better than people that had access to it, because it's inherent morality. Like, modern society wants to manipulate all these ideas into what fits their goals, but objective morality is just objective morality, and that's...
Do you think it's kind of like a little bit, it could be said better than modern society wants to? Like, you know, the people that are controlling modern society want us to.
Well, yeah, but they make modern society what it is.
So. Yeah, but modern society is kind of like the economy. You know, it doesn't really exist other than a concept that we, you know, you can't say that it wants anything. It doesn't want, it just moves.
Modern society is made of people who are influenced by ideas and have certain beliefs that mostly aren't their own, but it's still their beliefs, and that is modern society.
Yeah, but it doesn't want to go, it doesn't want to follow TikTok.
It's what it believes.
Yeah, it doesn't want, though. It wants only the things that are shown.
It is what it is.
Yeah, I agree.
It has beliefs, even if it doesn't want them, because it's been convinced.
Well, and I think it, you know, that was one thing it would, in modern society and or people or whatever would want, and it probably does want, is belief. It needs things to believe in, and it's given them. And that's part of where this science. Yeah, that's why where this conversation started too.
But Martin Luther,
go ahead, man.
I'm trying to remember the point against him, which was.
I was saying that basically the church is stripped down to the book, and therefore whoever controlled
the book,
the printing press that came along before him, a few decades before, that's what we're taught. Okay. Whoever controls that book controls
this argument.
The church.
There's not anything you can do about that, but what you can do is look at what's written and then look at the institution and hold them accountable for manipulating it, which the church was definitely doing, and his role was holding them accountable for it. That's what was significant about Martin Luther, is he was the person pointing out the hypocrisy in the church against the writings. Like, he wasn't saying it should be rewritten. Like, sure, he had a hand in like what is and is not Apocrypha. I've read most of the Apocrypha. I think most Christians should read it. They're very interesting books. And I don't think he's wrong for excluding them, because his goal wasn't like being a Christian scholar. His goal was to bring Christ to the masses. He wanted a book that would tell people what they needed to know and bring them peace and prosperity. And that might have excluded things, but it also included everything that was important. Like, if you want to be a scholar, well, the Apocrypha is still there. You can read it, and yeah, you should. If you're gonna like read about all this shit, you should absolutely read it. It's fantastic. But that was what he was about.
You said included everything important. I mean, I think the same argument that's made against the Constitution can be made there, though, made against that being true. And I'm not necessarily making this argument, just pointing it out. You know, people say that the Constitution was either made to create what is created exactly where we are today, or it was inadequate to protect us from it.
It's perfect. I mean, just like Martin Luther's efforts, like.
But that's the other side of the argument,
is the interpretation of modern politics.
Well, but that maybe that problem was a planned. That's where this conversation started. Is maybe that was all planned because these people think a couple generations ahead, and they knew this was possible.
It was inevitable, but there was also no way to avoid it.
That's not what you were saying earlier. Maybe we could have a different future. Maybe there was a way to avoid it. Maybe things could have gone better. This comes down to like the free will thing again. And my favorite question is, do you believe in free will? And whatever the answer is, well, you get to choose if you believe that or not.
Wild times. I think you made a really good point about the Constitution, because I think with the Federalist Papers and the way that the founding fathers argued over the exact wording of certain key phrases in the Constitution, I think it's because the side among them that wanted to actually stand for the people's liberty and an actual limited and enumerated government and what their powers were, I think that they basically bent the knee at the end of the day. They capitulated, and I think if they had been stronger. Stronger men, stronger Christians, then yeah, I think the future could have been different.
Yeah, I don't disagree. So here's two interesting points from my study of all that I've run across that are always salient. So I was just talking about this earlier today. The biggest two words in the Constitution that are used to fuck us are general welfare. We were having this conversation earlier. So general welfare, in its real at the time it was made, that current vernacular of the time was made
by white people.
this is the argument about the Constitution did allow everything good to happen, from women getting rights to it allows for all that. The Constitution only restricts the government; it doesn't restrict the people. So, you can argue that it's either caused this to happen or was inadequate to protect us from it. But I mean, Fox, pointed out that that's,
to protect us from it. It was
our it obviously was, but that's not the point I'm talking about.
You can't expect a multi-hundred.
I can expect whatever. I you can't tell me what I can expect. It's obviously inadequate to protect us from it. So,
Nothing can protect you from your own naivety and what happened.
Yeah, well, I didn't sign that fucking document. I didn't sign that fucking document, and I didn't have anything to do with the way this government was formed today. So it has nothing defensive. To do. Yeah, but you're telling me naivety has something to do with this. You're just being ridiculous, bro.
I'm referring to your personal naivety. I'm referring to the naivety of society.
Yeah, well, society. You said your own, that you wouldn't say, you didn't say society's naivety. So if you want to be precise with your language, that's cool. But if you don't, I'm not being defensive. I'm being realistic and not ridiculous. Okay. So, it's not my naivety or society's naivety that led to this or not, even if it was the Constitution. The Constitution was inadequate to protect us from what's happening today. If otherwise it wouldn't have happened. So if there's no way to make it better, well, then we're fucked no matter what document's there. But it obviously didn't. Actually, here, the bigger point is.
Fucked by the Constitution. We're fucked by generations of people who became complacent with comfort and allowed things to go to be manipulated because they didn't care because they were profiting.
Yeah, well, the Constitution should have said, hey, fuck faces, this is going to happen. Make sure it doesn't. But it didn't say that. It didn't give us a fair warning.
They just should have called the future.
Well, look, and I've actually got a second point to back that pretty well. But here's what I was saying: the general welfare clause is used now, right? It's used to actually talk about that exact thing, society, and we have it in our heads. It's the manipulated language is that welfare is the good of the people, how the society is doing, and we have to do some things that might be a certain way to make sure the welfare of society is good. Now, general welfare meant nothing like that when this Constitution was written. When it was written, general welfare meant that the people would all have equal use of the land with no restrictions. That's what it meant. So that has been twisted to basically allow public policy to shape all the stupid socialist shit that's happening today. And that's where, again, it's a real salient point, real precise point of its inadequacies, because the language got manipulated. Like Fox said, these guys bent at the knee. Now, here's the other part real quick. What you said the national, I'm already giving away my point. The Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers, most of the constitutional scholars I've studied agree they shouldn't have been called the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers. That's a scam too. They should have been called the Nationalist and Anti-Nationalist Papers because they really were not discussing federalism. They were arguing over points of how nationalistic the government should be.
And you said a phrase earlier that really hits on the crux of the matter. You said that the Constitution restricts the government. You see, I don't think you intended this, but even the use of that phrase betrays the fact of how far we have gotten away from the original vision of the Founding Fathers. It's not that the Constitution should restrict the government. It's that the Constitution should define the very few things that the government is allowed to do, and anything that it does not specifically enumerate it to do is presumed to be the power of the people.
Well, it does say that, but isn't that like the problem with like everything, the human condition, right? Is like we have all this good happen to us. What do we remember at the end of the week? The shitty part, right? That it says that, but it's one line. Like, you know, it's easy to lose, you know, and that's what a part of its inadequacy. It should have said that for like 15 pages.
I agree. It shows that we've lost sight as a people, and what makes an American is how he thinks. And if the way he thinks is that power is always held by the government by de facto, and our rights only come from what the government gives to us or what some Constitution protects, then we've become slaves in our own minds. And I think that's what
and the government, you know, rights being available to us, being God given, is the one of the things that a lot of the guys that I've studied talk about with the Declaration of Independence. It's either a founding document or it's not. And if we don't consider it a founding document, you know, the Constitution's really like doesn't say nearly enough. But if you consider the Declaration of Independence
you know, a founding document where it talks about our God-given rights. And, you know, I think that's important to keep that, you know, involved in the conversation. And so Michael Badnarik, I'm not sure if he passed away or not. It's Constitution, last I checked today, constitutionpreservation.org. He has a bunch of, you know, good points about all these things surrounding, you know, all these points. I'm sure I'll bring them up again. But one of my favorites is like, I think it's you know, Constitution, Bill of Rights, Clause, number one, Congress shall make no law. He's like, they should have just put a period right there.
Yeah. And why is the Declaration itself not part of the Constitution? It should have, even if the entirety of the text, isn't there.
Actually, it is.
After the break.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
My name's Tom Valpra, and you're listening to Fakeologist.com, you wanker.
Yeah, you wankers. So it's Thursday, April 6th, a little bit after 1 a.m. on EDT. Carolinas, I think you were going to jump in there.
Well, you have this might make great war. The quotes that basically replaces the Constitution with the Declaration. All men are created equal, et cetera, et cetera. And the entire, you know, the whole course of, well, I mean, you're supposed to have these amendments to this document, and a whole section of the country is forced to accept them on pain of not losing martial law. I mean, it basically sets you up with the whole 14th Amendment. I mean, other people in other countries might not know about this, you know, what this means, but every single thing that we have from, what is it, you know, like, pretty much everything PC in the fourth through the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, so the 14th Amendment citizenship issue is a huge one. I think that is something that you know, the average American has no idea what the 14th Amendment is. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you study all the maritime law stuff and all the things surrounding our enslavement, I think it's pretty clear where they were all treated unless we correct our status as 14th Amendment.
I see the Constitution as completely, like, I see where we are today as kind of intended by looking at, you know, where this came from. The Constitution all came from Masonic documents.
Sure. You know, one thing, though, that Derek being a little, you know, hey, Carolinas, you are getting some incredible feedback there. If you want to just check your noise suppression, that might help. Yeah, okay, that happens sometimes. So the one thing that he said about the Constitution, what was his point that I'm missing now?
I couldn't understand two words. That
you're gay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude. I'm also fake.
saying that I think it was intended like this from the
beginning. Yeah. Yeah, so it was Masonic documents. It's not, I mean, the guys who signed it, you know, you look at them and they weren't exactly all on the up and up necessarily. The stories were told are different than, you know, what seems to be the case being truth. But, you know, Badnarik says it well. It's like, we have a document, and I've done a lot of activism in the local courts and done court watching and studied the system that we have in place to allow us to start citizens grand juries, and tried to get 30 people that, you know, would actually study and form one that are, you know, non-felons. It's really all you need. And, you know, we couldn't really get past 12 people, no matter how far, and you reach too far, you're in the next state. But nobody gives a shit. Anyway, he says that, you know, we have a Ferrari in the garage, but it runs like a Yugo because of how we maintain it. And that's what our government seems to be. And, you know, to the Masons, like, credit, you know, maybe they're a little bit more, you know, neither benevolent or malevolent than we think. And, you know, this is an opportunity for us to govern ourselves if we could. but it doesn't seem like we've got it in us. Not like they leaned on giving us a fair opportunity, but it was an opportunity.
As soon as you had the Marbury versus Madison, basically pretty early on, I mean, as soon as the Supreme Court dictates itself as the supreme head
arbiter of constitutionality, yeah, that was where they stole that power. Yeah.
But then, I mean, you're basically asking
the IRS formed itself from a definition change, and man, we're still having the feedback issue. The IRS formed itself when they changed the definition. Excuse me, the ATF, I think, formed itself off a definition change, and then the IRS came out of those federal CFRs. So there's a lot of shady shit that happened. Not just that, but yeah, you know, the Barbaric versus Madison was the Supreme Court case where the Supreme Court decided it had the power, not the people, to declare things unconstitutional or not. That was never given to them or enumerated otherwise, or never even talked about in the Federalist Papers at all, that they would be doing that. And, you know, it's the mob investigated the mob and decided the mob did nothing wrong.
For me, the most important bits of the Constitution are the preamble. Five words for us and our posterity. I don't really care so much about the rest of it. I feel like we're cut off by this system from Christian government, i.e. from God-ordained kings. That's the Christian position. I'm not saying that the king back in 1776 was good, or that system was already good without fault.
Well, we don't have a king in America. But, as soon as you give up a monarchy, you give up Christ. Like, once you have this democratic republic, like, Christ is gone, because it becomes subject to subterfuge. A Christ kingdom only works when you accept, like, a single ruler who would fail if God wasn't behind it.
But that's the postulation, right? That's the postulation, but the experiment
is pretty clear.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't necessarily disagree with you, because we could ask, what constitutional republic is could prove that wrong, right? Which one exists that can prove it wrong? And you know, that's a fair statement against it. But you know, the idea that a monarch is going to be able to run things better than the people, I mean, I think that maybe it's true, maybe it's not. But like, the not would be us. It has to be proven, right? You know, through evidence that we can, you know, see for ourselves, and we would be doing it ourselves. And I think that what we're all talking about is exactly, you know, what the government has lost. There used to be no police. They used to be peace officers. And the entire, you know, if, you know, Fox sounds like he'll, I think he'd agree with this. The entire system was only designed to do like one thing, actually two things, really. Our government should only really be doing two things. Protect the general welfare. That means it makes sure the infrastructure allows all the people to have use of all the land equally. And equal, not even, you know, just as, you know, easy as anybody else would have it. You know, doesn't favor a bridge in one town or a bridge in another. Just everybody gets use of the land equally, and to protect our individual rights. Those are the only two things it should be doing. And if we held it to that standard, or gave a shit about that standard, it might be different.
Absolutely. The role of government is to protect our God-given rights, among those including, you know, pursuit of happiness, life, and liberty. I was going to say.
Well, and that was the point, is that we, you know, this government is supposed to be a government of delegated authority, meaning that we give it the authority to do the things we already have the authority to do ourselves, because we don't, you know, necessarily want to do them. And, you know, yeah, we're pretty lost from that.
Ultimately, man will be ruled by God or by the state. That has been proved emphatically throughout all of our known history. Men will not, even though we like to believe it's possible, men will never be able to just govern themselves. That's why Christ is back.
Yeah, Yeah, and this is where, you know, so I love to consider myself like an anarchist in the sense we don't think we need government or a, you know, real true constitutional libertarian or something, but you're correct in the fact that the state will probably be a factor more so than any libertarian wants it to ever be. And whenever I run into anarchists, like, it's so easy to dismantle, or the true libertarians, their ideas about how it would work. And it's as simple as like two people. If one guy has a river running through his property, he uses it for hydropower, drinking water, and blah, blah, blah. He hunts, he fishes, he lives a good life, you know, and does what he does. You can have cars, you can have horses, still all the same scenario. 5 miles away, another guy, another property. You know, if there are 2 acres, right? One guy has an acre, one guy has an acre, and then you don't need, and the stuff in between is public land. You don't need any other factors. So the guy up the river, 5 miles away, dams the river on his property, makes a little pond. That's all you need. And then he stops the ability of the other guy to use the land because he no longer has hydropower, no longer has drinking water. And so the other guy follows where the river used to be, finds him, they argue, they shoot each other, now we have a blood feud. That's what the monopolization of violence through the state was supposed to fix. And I've never found anybody from the libertarian camps or the anarchist camps to have any good explanation for how property disputes would work.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not dealing with people who are Christian and who will submit themselves to the authority of Scripture to see what the Scriptures would have them do, then and they're not willing to pray together about it, then yeah, there is no answer. It just flatly isn't. Because it just becomes a power struggle.
We had this exact scenario. Well, I say scenario, but I mean, this was a repeating thing in England. This is in Orthodox England, like before the Normans, before, you know, the Latin Pope was the top of everything, under Alfred. And the specific thing about feuds and back and forth, and it's kind of a lawless situation. And he basically just implements Justinian, the emperor in Rome a few centuries before. And he did this whole codex for law. And law was, and this does get back into both camps, like religion, law, government, all these camps. And basically it's law is never tyranny. So like, you know, if they're telling us to do something evil, we don't have to do it. I mean, personally, like they may try to force us and we're in a bad situation, whatever, you know, but in our heart, in our mind, us, our soul, you know, we don't do that. Like, you know, good people, we're not going to do that. But law is discovered. So like law is an implementation of justice. So like you take God's law, and then as society becomes more and more complex, we get more and more of these like tricky situations. So a law has to be discovered about the complexity of the situation. That's really it. Like it's a lot more simple than the Talmudist type of situation we have today, where there's a billion jillion laws and we're all felons every single day.
Yeah, three felonies a day. And I like the way you said
that's
that.
Mad.
Yeah, I like the way I hadn't heard it described so simply. Is it's kind of like mathematics, right? Is they weren't invented, they were discovered. And you know what Fox just said about you know, if you're not willing to sit and pray over it, I mean, then you have to have a central authority if you're not willing to cooperate with your brothers and sisters of everywhere, right? And you know, that is what essentially, like you're saying, the law should be. It would come to the same result. So,
have a God-given king or whatever that's operating under this authority, then, you know, the dude who's not going to pray or whatever, but he's going to F your land over or, you know, try to say you can't use this public well, you know, the authority has to step in. And there was loads of cases like this of government. Like, I can give you examples. And all these examples, it's like, okay, well, what do we do with this?
Well, can you nowadays? Can you walk me through like one of the biggest ones?
Sure. The farmer Ivan, he writes the Tsar. He says the sheriff, I mean, the guy that's essentially the sheriff, he's not, he's taking my sheep and he's stealing my animals. Do something about this because I don't have any other means to do anything about this. And the dude gets arrested. And someone else, and then like in certain cases,
the farmer gets arrested, or the sheriff.
The sheriff.
Okay.
You know, he has to give back and pay restitution, or he's out of a job. And then oftentimes they'd be like, "Well, do you want to do the job?" You know, and then
the farmer.
Yeah. So. Like, there's loads of these cases, like, more modern times. But, like, the difference was the bureaucracy they had in this whole massive empire was, like, they had equal number. I think they had more bureaucrats in the city of Paris than they did in the entire Russian Empire in, like, right around 1900. So it's a lot more anarchistic in the sense of, like, you have to obey them.
Let me ask you this. So, all right, like, let's take what you said as an example. I mean, it's a good example because it's simple, right? But we have the same system here in America that's supposed to produce the same result, right? I mean, let's call it a county cop, a sheriff. He's stealing my shit. You know, you call in the authorities, so like call the state police or call in the FBI. So I think, you know, if you're dealing with a county cop, you'd probably call the state police. If you're dealing with a sheriff, you probably call the FBI, right? Now, let's say that happened. Okay, that great, you know, and that would work. And I struggle to say that our bureaucracy is too big. That's why it doesn't work. But I then thinking about it, I mean, you know, the average guy in the average county, you know, suburban house, it's not like he interacts with so many bureaucrats that the system's bloated. I mean, when you do interact with bureaucrats, it's obvious there's too much of them where they are. But it's not like they're sprawled around the, you know, tax collecting, just like, you know, we hear stories about the past. So I'm just wondering, like, you know, how would you apply that, those lessons to the current situation we find ourselves in to, you know, how should they apply any better or how could they?
Well, okay, so like if our case does, if what we have does produce justice, then we need to submit to it. Like in the Soviet Union, I mean, like from a religious, even a monarchist, like if you're having a monarchist viewpoint, but it's like if they arrest a murderer and the murderer is dealt with, whether it's like violently or maybe they don't apply a proper sentence, but at least he's like taken away from the community. That's, you can't like protest that, and you shouldn't really, you know, maybe you know what I mean? Yeah, like
what we would be protesting, I don't think that's the problem here. What we would be protesting and what we do protest is when, you know, the sheriff's cousin rapes a girl and nobody can get him behind bars.
Well, in that case, you don't really have a lot of political action.
You know, what I'm going to ask is how does, because all you guys had pointed out, you know, good points about the monarchy. That's what I'm going to ask. How does the, how could it be better done?
You just described a microcosm of what's going on now. The FBI has raped this country, raped everything we stand for, and we can't hold them accountable because they're in bed with the Injustice Department. So at some point, you have these layers of watchmen, but ultimately, nobody watching the top watchman.
Well, agreed. And, you know, we find ourselves in a place where the system's perfectly designed, right? It taxes us just enough to keep us compliant, but not painfully enough to make us revolt. We have just enough interaction with the government in our lives to fear them, but not enough to really give a shit. And, you know, the path to holding them accountable is starting at the bottom and working our way up. But we don't see we don't see the problem at the bottom because it's just not that big of a problem.
Well, I mean, I could give you, you know, what it would have worked like in that society, but that doesn't really help you here in America today. So
I understand, but like, so I, you know, what I'm saying is, I kind of think we're stuck in a, not stuck in a system, we're in a system that is supposed to produce the same result. So like, let's like take my example and like, you know, let's say that the guy supposed to arrest the sheriff doesn't arrest him. Then what?
how does the monarchy system, you know, or how does that Justinian law system solve this any better if we run into the same problems, kind of? That, and I'm not saying, like, oh, it's wrong, because I understand that, you know,
well, the buck stops. The buck does stop there, you know, in that case. Like, in that case, you don't have someone who's inheriting power through popularity contests. There,
yeah, well, you know, now you don't even have that because they're rigged. Here's something a lot.
Here's something
a lot of people don't know. Do you know that the reason why they rigged the elections is because there it would only be one party by now? Yeah, go look up how many registered Republicans and registered Democrats there are today. If they are all voting along party lines and 60% of the voting population votes, I think it was like 1962 or something, Democrats would have run every election ever since, because there's millions more Democrats than Republicans. They only fake the elections because they have to keep the system alive. After the break.
I need dollar, 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 that's what I need. Hey, hey. Well, I need dollar, 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 that's what I need.
Would you like to support Fakeologist.com and all the content we're creating? We operate on the value for value principle, where you pay whatever you can for whatever value you feel you've received. We accept donations in almost every form, from PayPal to Bitcoin. Please go to fakeologist.com/donate for your payment options. Thank you for your support.
And if I share with you my story, would you share your dollar with me? Come on, share your dollar with me. Go ahead, share your dollar with me. Come on, share.
We're hitting twilight hours on Thursday, April 6th, EDT. We've got Fox 7 with us, not sure, which is Carolina's Brian here, Wild Times 3. And Truth I Am, Zarek's been on mute for a while, maybe he'll come back. But yeah, I mean, Carolina, you nailed it on the break.
I think that we're at a place that the founding documents did describe. Of course, in the Declaration of Independence, it's not only our right, but our duty to overthrow a tyrannical government. And wasn't it Ben Franklin who said, from time to time, the tree of liberty must be replenished with the blood of patriots and tyrants?
And tyrants.
T. Jefferson.
Yeah, okay, Jefferson, sorry.
Did you hear what I said about the Maryland Constitution earlier?
I'm not sure, but I think that's where we're at in history right now.
Yeah, yeah, and I think you're dead on. And what I said about the Maryland Constitution earlier, I think it was before you came in the preamble to the Maryland Constitution, one of the things that it says is, and this is not the Constitution you'll find in print today, but it was one of the original ones. Or the original one that was passed. One of the lines that says in the preamble is passive resistance, or like no resistance to arbitrary authority is absurd.
Say that again?
Non-resistance to arbitrary authority is absurd.
Right, right.
You know, it's basically saying, like, yes, we will have to overthrow this thing that we're creating with this document if it's going to act in an arbitrary manner.
Well, all the checks and balances are it's like if they have a system under total capture, then yeah, you're basically just in a sea of, I mean, you have this tyrannical system, but you also are in a logical inner heart kind of position. You're just in the sea of confusion, and yeah, you don't
perfect word,
like capture, we said,
right?
Perfect word, yeah, that's systems analysis for like where we are, like. You know, where it does it, where the institution operates in a totally captured manner, like it doesn't operate as sold, like, well, it's supposed to produce justice, but it
regulatory capture, right?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, anyways, I'm sorry, Fox, to interrupt you.
No, it's sorry. I we're going back and forth here. It's okay. I feel like I'm interrupting you. But regulatory capture is like when the regulatory agency is captured by the industry it regulates.
Yeah, that's that's standard.
Yeah, and so it's well pointed out, and that's where like we're, you know, it does seem like we're stuck there, and it's nice to, you know, just admit there's no solution for that, and admit that it's slavery, and that's where I think that, you know, we find ourselves stuck in this situation where nobody wants to admit that. I get, you know, like I point that out. I win an argument. So, you know, I'm winning nothing, but I'm making my points better than somebody else can make it. And then I just get called negative. Like, sorry for observing reality for what it is.
There is a solution. It's the elephant in the room of every single discussion of this nature. I don't have, y'all are men. I don't have to tell you what that solution is. The problem is, which hill are we going to choose to die on? And for me, I'm not going to die on the hill for Mr. Self-proclaimed father of the vaccine. I will not die on that hill for him. But if it was Governor DeSantis who just said, I will not comply with any extradition order regarding Trump, I might change my mind. If I could rally around somebody like Governor DeSantis, that might be worth dying for.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like every politician in this land is if he really had a good plan and a good idea and was outside the system and was going to be able to affect it, he wouldn't. They would kill him. I'm skeptical. I think maybe that's my
beyond that though. Problem. He's actually done stuff. He's passed.
He passed laws. He didn't write any laws. And look, I'm not trying to say.
He passed resolutions in the Florida state government where he can call mandatory martial law to implement forced vaccinations. This is before CV happened. He got paid loads of money by all these pharma people. And this stuff has been in the books since before all this drama started. So I don't trust him a single lick. I live there.
Yeah, and he didn't write them, right?
And that's why I, you know, would push back against that idea about him. I don't trust him at all.
Yeah, but here's the other thing. Here's the other thing, right? Let's just keep an open mind for anything as possible. It's one thing I always
not because I hate politicians either. Like I just yeah, just because he did that.
Let's take both your points, right? I said I'm skeptical, but let's take both your points. Let's say I want to take the middle ground. You know, I'll be ready to move in any direction, right? And let's say he's a good patriot with it is like, you know, got the white hats on his side. Just take an argument.
You may not have to change your mind about DeSantis. And I say
he could be anybody. What I'm going to say is, though, is let's say he's a good patriot. He did what Carolina said, and it was to fund something else that we don't know about, so he could eventually get an opportunity to stab the beast in the heart, right? I think that we have to be ready for any possibility as like citizens of the world and of America to act. My thoughts about like if we're going to be able to affect the future have always kind of been, or at least the past couple of years, we're going to get one chance to do something useful, or our kids are, somebody is, but there will only be one chance. The Hydra will stick its head out once. And, you know, if we miss the swing, you know, life goes on. If we don't miss the swing, life might go on a little better for a while. But, you know, I think both those things are not mutually exclusive to each other. Like, he could have done that and still be good, but he could have, he could be not, you know?
Okay. You may not have to change your mind about DeSantis. And I say that because this is something my gut says, okay? The deepest pit of my gut, and I have no evidence for it. Putting that out there now. I think it's possible that Governor DeSantis has, over this last week, been having furious discussions with other governors of the union. And depending on how those talks go, even if you don't trust DeSantis, if there's another governor or another set of state legislators that you do have a little more.
Nope. I think they're all equally pieces of shit. But look, I'm open-minded to be proven wrong. Please. I hope you do.
Finish your thought, man. It's all right.
I'm like, I have a finite amount of patience. And I'm going to have to say, like, the next time, man, I'm just going to drop out the call. I'm trying to be polite.
Hey, brother, the guys who are like the main interrupters and problems in the conversation and were really like to monopolize, we're not here. I'm not trying to overtalk you or anything. I thought we're trying to go back and forth here. I thought we were doing a good job. You shouldn't be frustrated. If you feel like that's happening to you, mention it and we can, you know, modify how things are going.
Okay. Even though most of the politicians are untrustworthy, and they've definitely done sketchy things over the years. There are a select few that I feel like have done a much better job than they've done a poor job. The chief among them that's still in the game, even though he's had some sketchy things in the past, would be Rand Paul. If Rand Paul threw his hat in, man, you talk about a game changer.
Do you know where we lost that, that awesome opportunity that was had? I mean, I don't know how old you are, brother, but I think you're a little younger than me. And my parents, so this was even too, before I could vote, I'd have to double check the year, but it was Ross Perot. He was going to win. He was going to win back when he, was the first non-establishment, character that was going to win. And he dropped out. And then he came back, but that lost it for him, however that happened. And I remember my parents that were both going to vote for him, or, lifelong fucking system supporters. And when he dropped out, they lost confidence in him. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you about...
My mom voted for him.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you about these people in general as, from a standpoint. I don't research them. I don't know them. There could be a guy that's actually a stand-up Christian who's a good guy in there. I would know because I just kind of assume... the negative about them until there's reason to be proven otherwise. And I feel like for the most part, and most part, not universal, that, to get in these positions, somebody's got to usually have some dirt on you. But yeah, I mean, Rand Paul is a clinician like me, and he's a doctor, he's an opto, and, he's not out seemingly diddling kitties, doing all the stupid shit that these other guys do, getting DUIs, and he seems like a good guy.
He has objectively held Fauci's feet to the fire more than anybody in Washington, from what I've seen.
Yeah, and I think he's kind of doing the best he can in the shitty system. There was his name was Jason, a couple years back, it was Trey Gowdy and Jason something, another congressman that was, really lighting people on fire, if I'm going to hyperbolize. It was really trying to seemingly do good work and, on TV and stuff. And I think he quit. I saw the interview and he quit. And he was like, what am I doing? Spending time away from my family yelling at these people when nothing happens. And I agree with you that he's held Fauci's feet to the fire, but I don't know. My thoughts about the government at this point are more leaning towards, non-participation, by agreeing that Rand Paul did something useful. I kind of feel like that validates the government. And, right now we have supposedly, 60% of the eligible voters voting, over 50% gives them basically majority consent. I feel like if 10% of the people voted, we actually have a reason to say that this government needs to stop doing what it's doing. Yeah, no, dude, take your time. The way these calls work, all dead air is actually automatically pulled out. So we can stay silent for a couple minutes, it'll just get pulled right out.
Okay.
Take your time.
There's one other factor that I was always in the back of my mind, because Saul of Tarsus was somebody operating as a Pharisee. And working within the law of his office, he was persecuting Christians and even having them killed for their faith. But God, that phrase, but God, reached out and directly moved on Saul, and Jesus actually reveals himself to him, and then he names him Paul, and Paul eventually writes most of the New Testament. So I don't think that God is limited in what he can do. I think he could absolutely, if he could just find the man, just one man.
I don't think he needs to find him. He knows who he is. When it's time, it'll happen, if it's time, right?
Yeah, if you could find one man who had a heart for him, a man after his own heart, a modern day David, then we could, we would have a fighting chance. But the people need somebody to rally around.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Do you think one person is enough? I mean, I kind of feel like so. And I'm not in disagreement that, you know, yeah, there's a spiritual side of what we need that will eventually come because it has to. I mean, there's no other way that this would go. But, you know, I don't know that. I think it's maybe, and this, so let's say this is a perfect way to put it. The if it could happen, you know, then it would happen and it would be plausible. But it also could just not be plausible because once the central authority goes away, we don't need anybody to rally around. We don't need to do anything. It just will be out of our lives. And by ignoring it, it just, let's say all of it evaporated. You know, okay, we got to have somebody fix the potholes and we got to get a new sheriff and, you know, get the guys that were doing the firefighting to go back to the station. But other than that, we don't need to do anything. There's nothing that we need to fix other than just making it go away, making all the, you know, bad parts of it stop. So,
yeah, you're talking about a scenario where this iron fisted, tyrannical government is no longer, able to enforce itself.
Yeah. Essentially.
There's another factor at play. This is like the real dismal, ugly part of it. Realistically, even if we could achieve that goal, now we have the other goal of, we're going to have to fight and die, and at least half the population is going to have to, is going to kill the other half. That's just flatly going to happen.
You know, because so, well, well, let's.
There's too many welfare leech mindsetted people who believe that they have a right to what you have and what you can produce.
So what part of the iron fist that exists is required to keep that part of the system going?
I don't understand your question.
So the iron fist of the tyrannical system goes away, but the welfare thing keeps going. Why is that mutually exclusive?
I'm saying even without the government, at least half the country has fallen into this victimist mindset that they feel entitled to what others produce.
And they get it from the government is what you're saying, right? I mean, I don't disagree.
When they can no longer get it from the government.
Yeah, I get it. They're come kill us.
They're going to use force to try to take it from the people.
I understand. So here's what I'm asking though. If the iron fist goes away, why can't the checks still go out? And like, I mean, I know there's a couple steps to like a better point, but I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Like, why do we need the iron fist for the check machine to run?
The check machine only runs because of the iron fist. The dollar is only backed by the threat of force of the U.S. military. That's worldwide. That's all that the petrodollar rests upon. It's the strength of the government.
But I mean, why? So, but let's get real mechanical here. So the check machine continues. The iron fist goes away. Hey, yeah, understood. The iron fist goes away. The check machine continues. What goes wrong? Where's the problem?
Because the welfare state cannot be sustained. It's that's
so
why
it happened through inflation.
The debt is that's why the debt has spiraled out of control. The welfare state cannot continue, but there's at least half the country who refuses to accept that. And without the nanny state there to feed them, they're gonna start going into the neighborhoods to take what they want.
I don't disagree, but let's try to walk through the scenario. Let's say the iron fist goes away and, you know, the part that we don't like goes away. Why can't the check machine keeps running? What goes wrong? Why does the iron fist need to exist to keep the checks getting cut? Like down to mechanic, down I'm saying, like, will is the problem inflation?
or, and you know, national debt, who do we owe it to? Let's say we just cancel that.
I don't think communicating very effectively.
Well, I think I understand what you're saying here. But look, let's put the call on pause real quick here and hang out. Put yourself on mute for 1 second, all right? We're going to go move somewhere, and we'll bring this back if we need to, guys. If we don't, everybody have a good night, and we will chat soon.
That's all, folks.